Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the January 19th, 2021 regular meeting of the Chelan Public Utility District meeting commission. Today is a study and a business session. We have a relatively light agenda today, and I don't know how fast we'll get through the study session, but we will see. And I'd like to welcome any people on the phone that are not members of the commission or staff, and remind you that we will have opportunity for public input at certain portions of the meeting. And that that portion will be right at the end of the study session, and we'll see how that goes. Additionally, today there are four commissioners in attendance. Commissioner Congdon is not in attendance. And I make the assumption that we have three people in the boardroom. That is our manager, Steve Wright, clerk of the board, Rebecca Garfine, and general counsel, Eric Walquist. Probably all of them fully masked. I can see Steve. I don't see Eric at the moment. But by the way, I want to thank everybody that's made the extra effort to be online with your picture. It I find it very, very helpful. I see a couple of new faces that I don't know, and that even makes it more helpful knowing that I'm getting to see faces of people that I have not yet met. So thank you for that. And I think that is that covers everything other than with this many people on the call, on the meeting, unless you're going to be speaking, I ask that you try to mute your machines as much as you can, I know you might forget and start talking when you're muted, and we'll have to remind you, but we'll take that, and we appreciate you working with us on these Zoom meetings. The first item on our agenda this morning is the Pledge of Allegiance and Safety Minute with Dave Parkhill, and I don't know if I see Dave.
Good morning, Commissioner. I'm here via phone.
Okay, very good. So at this time, Dave, if you'd like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance and a Safety Minute, we would appreciate it.
Absolutely. I pledge of allegiance to the flag, the United States of America, and to the Republic, for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Well, good morning, Commissioners. Steve, hope you're having a great week. I am Dave Parkhill, the Senior Safety and Health Coordinator here at the district, and I wanted to talk about something that's pretty applicable right now, and it's cold weather. Taking a look at the forecast, here we are, middle of January, and looking at the forecast for the next week or so, they're looking at low 30s during the day and high teens, low 20s at night, even hearing rumors that we may get some snow here. So that said, in this time of both winter and with COVID, a lot of people are wanting to get outside, and I don't blame you. For those of you with kids in the house going to school, bless you, because I can't imagine. My kids are out. They're on their own. They're out of school, but those are having to do class inside, and I'm sure you're highly encouraging your kids to go outside. And so with that, it is nice to be able to go outside, but obviously we still want to follow good COVID restrictions when we are out there. But what I wanted to talk about today is when you do venture outside, it still can be dangerous. And if we have that excessive exposure to low temperatures, wind, moisture, it can cause two very dangerous conditions, and that's frostbite and hypothermia. And just wanted to highlight on both of these. Now, I think about some of the outdoor activities that a lot of you may participate in. You may want to go up to Mission Ridge. Maybe you like to ski or snowboard, or maybe Nordic ski up in Leavenworth, or even just taking a walk around the Loop Trail. When it's the wintertime, we need to really change our focus on what can we do to keep warm. And one of those things is, first of all, just check the temperature and try to limit your time outdoors. And just like we do in the summertime when we talk about heat stress, cold stress is also a big deal, and limiting your time. bundle up in several layers. Now, I thought of this, and a movie comes to mind. Maybe some of you have seen it, but I always remember in Christmas Story, Ralphie's little brother Randy, when the mom was getting him all ready to go to school, they bundled him up, and he couldn't even move his arms, right? He had one of those snow suits that maybe some of you had when you were growing up. I still remember, and I'll age myself, but I can remember my mom helping me put my rubber boots on, and I had to put shopping bags on my feet in order to get him into the rubber boots. So I know it that was a while ago. But I just think it's important to bundle up, wear layers. They've got so much better clothing now, if you will, in regards to layers, where it's not the cotton. It's a lot more wicking material. And so, yeah, they've definitely come a long way when it comes to layering up. Cover your head and ears. For those of you that might be a little follically challenged like myself, a good ski hat, a good hat to cover your ears and your head is never a bad thing. Wear socks. That'll definitely keep your feet warm and dry. And if you need to change out of them, that's okay. So what I want to talk about first is frostbite. It happens. And what that is when your skin is exposed to the severe cold, whether it's your fingers or toes or nose, earlobes are that's a big one there. And wind has a lot to do with that. Let's say you're up on Mission Ridge and you're up on chair 2 and the normal temperature for the day is 25. Well, you get a wind ripping through there at 40 miles an hour, it's going to feel like 6, okay? And frostbite can kick in within 30 minutes unless your hands are covered appropriately with gloves or mittens, and you have a good protection with your there we go. And if the condition progresses to frostbite, that's when layers of your skin could be affected. And so if you have frostbite or somebody in your group has frostbite, move them out of the cold immediately. Get them into a warm place. Try to remove any wet clothing. Warm it in lukewarm water if you're able to, 99 to 104 degrees, usually like what hot tubs or temperatures are kept out for about 20 to 30 minutes. And try not to use those chemical warmers directly on the frostbitten tissue. That's important to know. Now, in regards to hypothermia, I mentioned heat stress. This is really an opposite of that. Heat stroke, for example, can happen when your core temperature gets to 104 or more. Well, hypothermia can happen when your core gets to 95 degrees or less, and that's also associated with exposures to cold. And so severe shivering is one sign. If it progresses, you could be drowsy or exhausted, maybe confused. So with that, if you or if someone is with you has possible hypothermia, again, get out of the cold. Try to remove any wet clothing if possible. Get some blankets, even just a hand, somebody's hand on that area that might be cold or what have you, can definitely rewarm you. So with that, wintertime around Wenatchee can just be absolutely beautiful. It really can. And we all need a break. We all need to get outside. But again, enjoy this winter. Continue to follow those good COVID guidelines, even when you're outdoors. And I hope you all have a fantastic week. Any questions at all for me?
Good reminders, Dave. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. I couldn't figure out how to unmute my speaker for a minute. I only do WebEx a couple of times. So. But thanks a lot. That was a good safety minute. And having been out walking a lot, I do recognize how the wind can go right through you. And layers are great. Great advice. A lot of great advice. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Commissioner. I appreciate that.
Yes. Steve, do we have the auditor on the line?
Yes, you do.
Oh, great. Okay, we weren't sure. Welcome. So I think we are ready to swear in our two commissioners who recently won re-election, Commissioner Arsenault and Commissioner McKenna. So we are going to turn it over to the county auditor.
Good morning. Hi, this is Skip Moore here, and we're here to swear in Gary Arsenault and Steve McKenna. Gentlemen, since we are dealing, working with the phone situation, we can do you both at the same time, or we can do it one at a time, and I'll leave that up to you.
Both's fine for me.
Okay.
As well as me, you bet.
So what we'll do is I'll start out, and I'll say, I state your name, please state your name, and then I'll read through it, and there's one part at the end where I talk about the commissioner district. One of you will, Gary, will reply with Commissioner 1, and Steve will reply with Commissioner District A. And then once that's complete, I'd sign the forms. I will get them over to the PUD today. Then when you guys have the opportunity to sign where the X is, this will be all, I'll get them back to me. I get them recorded, and it'll all be good. So, if you would please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I state your name.
I, Gary Arsenault. Steve, you're muted.
Steve McKenna, you're muted. There you go.
I, Steve McKenna.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly
swear.
That I will support the Constitution.
I will support the Constitution.
Of the United States.
Of the United States.
United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Washington.
And the Constitution of the State of Washington.
And will faithfully.
And will faithfully.
And impartially.
And impartially.
Perform the duties.
Perform the duties.
Of the office of Chelan County Public Utility District Commissioner. Fill in your district. Perform the duties of the office.
Perform the duties of the office of
the public County UD. Chelan County Public Utility District Commissioner, District 1.
I know that's difficult, gentlemen. To the best of my ability.
To the best
of my ability.
There you have it. Your oaths are complete. You're sworn in. And I'll get this paperwork over to the PUD today.
Thank you, Skip.
Yes.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Welcome aboard, my fellow commissioners. It's good to have you back.
Thank you. Good to be
back. You were never missing.
What can we say?
So, thank you, Skip, if you're still there. Thanks a lot.
No problem. Glad we got it done.
You bet.
All right, you guys have a wonderful meeting.
Thank you. Okay, having finished that, item 2 on our agenda is the approval of the agenda. And at this point, normally, commissioners can ask for any agenda items to be moved to the consent agenda from the regular or the reverse. Staff has made no firm recommendation of any movement. Is there any changes that need to happen to our agenda at this point? Hearing none.
I don't think
we'll need a motion to approve the agenda as long as there's no objection. So,
all right.
Yeah. So if there's no objection, the agenda will stand as presented. So, thank you. Steve Wright, item 3, CPO winner.
Great. We are really excited to talk today about our CPO winners, Chris, Jake, Randy, and Natalie. So, this is a really interesting one, and we chose it that we had quite a few good nominations this month. We chose it because it does a couple of important things. One, great focus on continuous improvement, taking an existing process that we've been running and trying to find ways to be able to make it work better. And interestingly, using the data to be able to make it work better, using the availability of data which has been there and translating it into something that folks in the operational arena are able to utilize. So this has to do with the fish bypass at Rock Island. We have at least some of them on the line today. And I know we want to give them an opportunity to say something about this. And I'm not quite clear on whether we're going to start with them or whether Alan Eastridge wanted to describe the work that they do. Alan, maybe I'll start with you and just ask, do you want to start or would you like to have the group begin?
Sure, I can kick it off a little, but I want the, it's their award. I'd like them to talk to it. But to segue with what you stated, Steve, we were able to leverage existing tools to find out where we are with regard to fishway compliance at Rock Island, to understand what the impacts would or could be realized with moving into independent operations. And as we went through that process, Natalie, do you want to talk about the tools that we utilize?
Sure, yeah, I'll do that. So all the relevant data to be able to calculate whether or not the various aspects of the fishway ladders were in compliance were already stored in our PI Historian system. But we didn't have a great way to view it. So using Seek, which is a tool that's relatively new to the district, but we had already purchased prior to this project, I was able to make a dashboard that displays each of the various operational criteria and the percentage of the time we were in compliance. So I have a dashboard for each of the three ladders looking at both weekly and monthly metrics. And this tool connects directly to the PI data. So every time the tool is opened, the metrics are refreshed. And in tandem, Curtis Cole developed the PI Vision dashboard, which displays the raw data for each of the relevant PI tags. So if you look at the metrics I developed and see a time period where we've underperformed, you can scroll through the raw data to find what was going on at that time. And I felt like this was really exciting for me to work on because as a data analyst, I'm really excited when people are making decisions based on data, and I'm very happy to be able to facilitate that. So that was my role. I'll turn it over.
All right. Thanks, Natalie. And some of those operation criteria that the fishway attendants operate to, Jake and Randy, do you want to talk about dashboard that you utilize and what some of those operational criteria are? You might need to unmute Jake or Randy.
Can we hear me now?
I can hear you.
Perfect. Okay, so what you're looking at is just one of the computer programs that we use to help us achieve optimum hydraulics and achieve maximum fish passage. The fishway level at entrance, that differential we want to keep to a foot, foot and a half, and that ensures enough flow coming out of the fishway to attract the migrating fish upstream. And we also monitor the tailwater to gate differential. It's the another submergence we use to achieve a 6.5 foot at the entrances where more attraction water is available and can be added, and requirement is to achieve as much as 10 feet to make sure the fish know where to go and stay in compliance. Randy, if you want to add some more in there, feel free.
Hi, this is Randy. Just wanted to tell y'all, in a nutshell, all these numbers have been come up with engineers and biologists who figured out the optimum speed of the water that the fish will move upstream. And that's what we try to create here in criteria so the fish will move. If you don't give them any movement, they don't want to go anywhere. So we've got to influence them to go upstream. And that's what these numbers show. Thank you.
I'd like to just take a second and say I think this really fits some of our key values, the stewardship value. This is about compliance with the HCP and doing it in a trustworthy way where we're not waiting for somebody to come and tell us what to do. We're figuring out ways to make sure that we are operating in compliance. And certainly seeking operational excellence. So it just seems like a really great example of what we're trying to get to in terms of creating personal accountability in the organization and having folks step up and find ways to be able to continuously improve our operations. So we want to say thank you to all four of our nominees and awardees this month.
I wish to add my personal thanks to those that were able to connect with video. It makes it so much better, and I recognize we have technology limitations throughout the district. Not everybody can, but for those of you that I was able to see speaking, it really enhances that. So thank you so much for what you do and taking the time to share with us today. Any other commissioners have any comments they'd like to make?
Yeah, I just think this is really good work and blends together a number of our values and the utilization of data to do what we do and do it more effectively. And to a couple of the people who are mentioned here, doesn't surprise me. I mean, I know they have a great high school education.
Randy, if I could, I'd like to just add on to what Dennis so eloquently talked about. It's really great to see those charts and know that we have staff utilizing such data. One, to keep track of is everything running smoothly, but then to set targets on how we can even get better and monitor that, and that it's just that continuous learning, that continuous improvement model. And I think the exciting part for me as a commissioner is to see that, people are really enjoying getting better, appreciating one another, learning from the data. And I got to tell you, that helps getting up in the morning and getting to work, knowing that we're doing good work, we're making a difference, and we've got the data to prove it. And I think that goes along with building a great culture in an organization and help sustain that good work. So congratulations to that team.
Thank you. All right. Thanks again, and we will now move to our quarterly board balance scorecard, item 4. And in the past, we as commissioners have chosen to only go over those areas that where we're maybe not in the green at this moment in time, but I won't limit any commissioner to that. What we'll go through the scorecard. Commissioner Congdon is not here, and I'm looking at on her scorecard, the one that's in the white. I'm not certain what color that should be in COVID, because the COVID has really limited our Mid-Sea commissioner manager potential meetings. So let's drop on down, Rebecca, if you would. I'm looking at the screen. Commissioner Bowles, anything you care to put on? It looks like you're all in the green and you're ensuring effective execution.
I think we're doing okay.
Yep. We're all green in the business planning and strategy. So let's drop down to Commissioner McKenna, a responsible board representation.
Sorry, keep forgetting to unmute. The only area that we're in pink is and not in compliance is for NWPPA, and I don't have the information of what's occurring there, so I can't respond to that. But in the other areas, we're doing fine in our attendance.
I might add while you're scrolling down, Rebecca, that with COVID Zoom meetings for the association, we've actually probably done better than we would have in the past. it's easier to attend those meetings. I'm looking at the audit committee. I believe that's an automatic, if I'm not mistaken, that we're in the red, so I might cover that with Rebecca, but I think that the president and vice president are automatically appointed upon taking office, and so that should be green, if I'm not mistaken.
I can make that correction if you like. It's just that the officers were not appointed in 2020. That was pushed off until January of this year.
Ah, okay.
It was an attendance.
So that needs to be done in December, and we didn't do it then. I understood.
That's when it's usually scheduled.
Okay.
Yeah, so the first audit meeting, commissioners, has not occurred yet for this year. So you haven't missed any meetings at this point.
Right. I think, yeah. Okay, very good. On down on governance, we're in the green. Is that the end of it, Rebecca?
Yes, that's the end of the report. The rest of the documentation is just the attendance tracker.
Okay. All right. But overall, that seems like the, you know, even with COVID, maybe at some point, because of COVID, we did better on some areas. We had a couple of shortfalls this past year. But I want to give kudos to the board for stepping up and participating as well as they could in this new Zoom reality. So, thank you. All right, Steve, should I hand it off to you for Service Center update?
Yep, I think that would be great. So we want to talk to you today about what's going on at the Service Center. You know that we have been moving towards putting in place the big contract to do the construction work out there. That is scheduled to come forward at the next board meeting. So this is an update to tell you where we're at and prepare for an action item at the next board meeting. I'll turn it over to Dan Frazier and David Lodge.
Morning, Commissioners. Dan Frazier, Director of Shared Services.
David Lodge, Project Manager with Engineering and Project Management.
So as David brings up the presentation here, we have a nice aerial taking a little bit ago on the work to date. David will be covering what's gone on site. Looks a lot different than the grass field we've known for 20 years out there, so lots of progress there. David will cover that. But really why we're here today, and Steve touched on it, is to bring you up to date on the activities that have been occurring. We promised that we'd come back on a regular basis to talk about the progress of the project, and so we're here to do that. And also to preview, as Steve indicated, the larger project that's coming forward, the larger add to the contract, all the remaining construction work. So we'll be previewing that, and there's a couple of supporting resolutions that will be additionally at the next meeting that support the rest of the project work. So that's why we're here today. So
we can go to the next slide.
Yep, thank you.
Yep.
This is some of the work David will cover. These are the actions that we'll be seeking at the February 1st meeting. We'll be recapping those at the end of the presentation.
Okay, next slide. So the site work started in August, and it was a great thing that we got an early start on it. We were able to take advantage of the nicer weather and get a ton of work done in preparation for building structures. We've worked 160 days so far with zero injuries and plan to keep that increasing. And the work that was performed was the clearing, grading, all the underground utilities, and underground site electrical, and then building our building pads. And a big activity in that was doing these aggregate piers for the building foundations. We had over 1,000 drilled piers that are filled with compressed rock, and the building foundation sits on top of that. So let's jump to the next slide. Now we're getting ready, preparing to start the building construction, and the next action on that is to award a contract amendment to increase the current contract with Absher Construction to include that work. So I wanted to cover what is included in that. So it's obviously all of the buildings and all of the site work, all of the cabling for our technology systems and all of the rough-in, and then also the integrated operational equipment, so things like bridge cranes. All of this is part of the contract, but it's not everything in the project. So there are still some items that will be separate contracts, like our off-site road improvements, our racking for the warehouse systems, and the furniture. So we will have additional contracts that require board action for those components of work. And then this picture you see here is some of the underground electrical work. This is one of the smaller duct banks on site. There's some pretty major ones. So next slide. So to take a look at our schedule, we know that we pulled the site construction work into, we did it early in 2020, and now with the next contract amendment, we'll be able to start building construction. So the longest path in our construction schedule is building the operation, or the administration building. We call it Building A. It's the four-story building. It's the most complex construction because it's vertical. So that'll be the longest amount of time, and inside of that window, we'll construct all of the operations buildings. And what this allows us to do is start occupying those operations buildings before we complete the administration building. So it lends itself to kind of a phased move-in schedule, starting with occupying those operations buildings first. So we're looking at starting to move in at the end of 2022 and into early 2023. And so a lot more detail to come on that move-in plan. That's kind of high level. So next slide. So it's worth talking in detail about how we developed this contract amendment price. And we broke all the rules for how to make a PowerPoint slide here, but there's a lot to it, so I wanted to cover this in detail. The first part of the guaranteed maximum price is what's called the maximum allowable construction cost, or the MAC. And that includes all of the subcontracted work. So we've bid out about 75% of that work and received just lump sum, low bid subcontractors. About 10% is still estimated and remaining to bid until we have enough detail from the architect to bid that out. And then 15% is negotiated with our electrical contractor construction manager, or ECCM. And the way we select them was they bid their general conditions and fee, similar to how ABSHER was selected. And then they bid out all of their subcontractors, and we negotiate the cost of work, and they get paid on a reimbursable basis. And all of that is subject to a third-party audit, which we've already engaged to make sure that we've got the contract set up correctly and are accounting correctly for the whole project. Okay, so that makes up all of our subcontractor costs in the MAC. Then there's a factor on that of 3% for contractor's risk contingency. And this is the account for the contractor's risk, but the owner, the district, gets oversight of how that is spent and provides approval for spending of that contingency. And then we have negotiated support services, which is another cost of work reimbursable account. And this is for all of the supporting services on site, like sanitation, dumpsters, hoisting, cranes, that kind of thing. And finally, we have specified general conditions and the contractor's fee, which were proposed in the RFP response and subject to competitive selection. So all of this together makes up our guaranteed maximum price. Let's go to the next slide. And what's highlighted here is our GMP2, which is the proposed amendment. But I want to back up to the previous slide. So this is what we currently have under contract with ABSHER. If you recall, we initially, next slide, but the first column is the previous. When we started working with ABSHER, we awarded a pre-construction agreement with them for $500,000. Then we awarded GMP1 for the site work, and that was $8.9 million. And we've had $200,000 in change orders to date. So our current contract with ABSHER is the $9,666,000. So with this amendment, we'll be adding $95,130,000 for a total contract cost of $104.8 million. Okay, so let's go to the next slide, and we can see how that relates to our total project budget. So this is the last number on the previous slide, the 104.8. We have sales tax on that, plus RCW requires us to carry a 5% owner's contingency, and that's calculated based on 5% of the GMP, less change orders to date. And then we have all of our, we call them soft costs, but all of the costs outside of the construction contract. So design services, construction support services, permitting, offsite improvements, and then all of our furniture, fixtures, and equipment. The sum total of all of that is $139,186, which is just under our project budget of $139,535. So we're really pleased with the pricing that Apsure was able to get from their subcontractors and put the GMP amendment together under budget. So we'll jump to the next slide. So there is a big local economic impact for all of this work, and we broke it down into a couple of different categories. The first is the awards that will be going, have or will be going to local contractors and suppliers. So this is a little misleading saying that it's already awarded because we haven't awarded anything under GMP 2 yet. But of the $104.8 million total construction cost, total contract cost, so far 26.7 is headed towards local contractors. So that includes the electrical, civil, asphalt, landscaping, concrete supply, survey, temp fencing, and likely more as we continue with buyout. As I mentioned before, there's still about 10% remaining to bid. And then we can also look at how the sales tax gets distributed within the state and within the city. And Dan, do you want to hit on that real quick?
Yeah, so the sales tax is something we've been looking at for economic impact throughout the project. And we've been talking with the city of Wenatchee about what the impact is there. Their budget on this. And so the Washington State, of course, is the largest winner here, and they receive about $6.8 million in direct sales tax. The city of Wenatchee, between sales tax, utility fees, permits, and we had the additional purchase of the right-of-way for Horan Road, there's a little over, just under $2 million of impact in the city of Wenatchee. And then the junior taxing districts like Link, the PFD, or South Dakota Center, Ashland County and Rivercombe all receive a nice share of the local tax impact. So as we've had questions about this project and what it does for the local economy, and I think this is, between these two charts here, definitely something that's provided a boost during COVID times and also just a nice bolstering of some of the local tax revenue.
So we can go to the next slide. And every time we've presented on this project, we've shared different project risks. And while there's many that are behind us, there's still many ahead of us. We wanted to touch on those. So ones that are behind us, we have Horan Road resolved, the shoreline use, the building code updates, and those are all resolved. Some that we had identified as risks, we did realize the impact of those. So our cultural, archaeological, we did have some delays to the contractor on that work, but they were very manageable within the project budget, and it was a process that was important that needed to take place. Environmental, we're not quite done, but we have a good plan, and again, we feel this one has been managed. Construction cost escalation, we did realize the effects of this, as we knew we've been concerned about cost escalation all along, and even up to the last minute, commodity prices were just running up like crazy. Steel, lumber, and PVC all were increasing quickly, and so we didn't want to hold our bids off any longer than we already had. So it's striking a balance of trying to get just enough information for bidders to be able to provide a good number and try to beat the rising costs. And then offsite road improvements, where we've got our arms around this scope, and we're still in design. That will be a separate contract to extend Technology Way over to Easy Street. We're coordinating with the city on that. And then other coordination with permitting agencies, we are currently in for building permit review, and the comments that come back post-bid will need to reconcile with the bidders. But again, it's a balance of trying to get the best price we can as early as we can with what we know. Okay, so those were all design related, but we still have a whole project to construct. So ongoing, we have typical construction project risks. Many of these have been assigned to the GCCM, and they can manage that risk with their contingency, but not all. And we know that there's always the unforeseens that arise. COVID-19 construction impacts. The project has been impacted by COVID-19. We've had some delays to design, some scope changes, and even impacts to our construction. But so far, the project has been able to adapt, pivot, and work within the constraints. But going forward, there's some assumptions that we've had to make about what that looks like over the course of the project. And if the current guidance gets more restrictive or the timeline gets longer than anticipated, that could result in additional impacts to construction. Another one is accuracy and completeness of the bid documents. As I mentioned, the design is not 100%. We bid out progress design with the bid packages that we were felt ready to bid. And so as we finish that, it could impact some of the bids that we've already released, but we're, again, balancing that with the rising costs of commodities and construction, and we feel that this is a manageable risk. And then coordination with district technology systems, this was identified very early on in the project. We have some very complex systems that need to be relocated to the new campus, and the coordination is very technical. We've been working with internal stakeholders on this, and we feel we have a very strong plan, but there's still a lot more detail to add to that. And then finally, we really can never cross off additional stakeholder requirements. There's always the risk of new requirements arising, and as we navigate our way through construction, we'll work through those and bring them to project governance as needed. So hopefully that captures the majority of project risk. We still do have a lot of work ahead of us, but we feel that we're set up well for success with our overall project budget. So next slide.
Before you head on to the next one, I just wanted to touch on one of the things that we've realized through this project is the use of the GCCM process has been incredibly beneficial to the district, and a lot of it is related around these risks and how they were resolved or realized and the ability to mitigate those impacts. So I know these are the first few projects we've been doing under GCCM where it has been a hard bid agency, and using these tools, there were some growing pains, but I think this project really was able to capitalize on these processes so that we were able to stay in budget, and that's huge on a project like this. You have all these risks that we were trying to manage, and we had a partner helping us with those risks. So it wasn't we're trying to design something and then hoping and praying at bid opening day that our intent is realized at bid opening. We had a partner throughout the process that helped us make great design decisions, decisions about even environmental treatment of the site, all the different ways to manage construction cost escalation. So this is really something that we hoped we would get from this process, and it's great to get to this point and be able to share good news that the process really enhanced our ability to be successful. So that's one of the things I wanted to make sure that the board understands, that those going into this new way of doing business has been beneficial.
Thanks for mentioning that, Dan. We talked about that in practice, and I kept forgetting to bring it up. Not only has ABSHR and TCF been great partners through all of design and bidding, we know that they're going to be great partners to work through all of the challenges that we face in construction, and we'll be able to work together to get to the end and see this project succeed. So it's a great delivery model and working very well so far. So next slide. So what's next? At the next board meeting, we'll present a resolution to execute the contract amendment with ABSHR Construction for building construction, and that'll be the $95.1 million GMP amendment. And then we also have proposed resolutions for the service agreement for TCF Architecture to increase their service agreement not to exceed price, as well as Keith Lee Barber, who is going to be our third-party commissioning agent. So we'll present those at the next meeting. And then we'll continue to provide the board with updates periodically and to keep you informed of the project as it progresses. So next slide.
Before you head off on this one, I did want to mention there's been some questions around this external party commissioning services. And this is something the district has not done a lot of, but we did start doing this on the Rock Island facilities and noticed that it was a huge benefit in terms of our ability to have a third party commission our mechanical and electrical equipment. So we have much higher confidence that we won't have that initial problems as things start out that you do when you come into a new building. And so we've decided to utilize their services for the service center also. So that's it's not typical for a lot of our projects. So we've got to draw your attention to that.
Thank you. So we can go to the final slide. Any questions?
This is Steve. Can I go back to the commissioning comments? Does the commissioning come from the electrical mechanical company itself, or is this a third party?
Both. So the electrical mechanical contractors are responsible for commissioning their systems. The commissioning agent helps to organize the program and witnessing of all the tests and helping to document it. So there's a lot of effort in bringing that process together and testing everything as a system, and they help to lead us through that.
I just asked the question because it's an interesting situation where, it almost seems like you want a third party. I mean, I know it comes from the contractor themselves. They pay for it. It's part of the deal, part of the bid. But then if it's them monitoring themselves, it just kind of strikes me as an odd. It always has, regardless of what situation you're in. And I know they can hire that out. And a lot of these companies have created a business within a business so that they generate that income to do their own commissioning. And I just thought I would bring that up. It just concerns me sometimes.
Those are valid concerns, and that's why we would be hiring this third party commissioning agent. So the contractors are performing the tests, but our commissioning agent is witnessing and validating the tests.
Okay. I like that. Thank you very much.
And that third party is working for us. Nobody else.
Correct.
Thank you for that clarification.
Yeah, Commissioner McKenna, I know this has been a kind of a big issue in schools over the years. I'm sure your strikes in schools, kind of where that question came from. And I was a commissioning agent that did electrical commissioning to come in years after a project was done and find that some of those things that were supposed to be done during commission were not done adequately. And so right. I think there's been a lot of discussion in the education community about the concept of third-party commissioning, and that's really part of the reason we took this step to actually initially bring in a third-party commissioning.
Good. That makes me feel much better. Thank you.
Thank you. Good update. And so in 2 weeks, we'll have a really big motion in front of us, won't we?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Well, this is an important moment in the district's history, and I think we'll all look back once we're done and talk about what we did right, and hopefully we'll get it going. It'll happen the right way, and the way you guys are planning, I think it will. So thank you.
Well, thanks to the commission for all the support. As we said 5 years ago when we embarked on this process, we didn't expect to be here. So it's great that we've made it here. hear momentous decisions happening in the next few weeks, and so we really appreciate it.
Thanks, Kate. Good presentation.
Yes. Steve.
Okay. Thanks, Dan and David. We'll move now to the 2021 District Performance Plan Review. The board, I think, is familiar with this process, but just to review, we start the year with a new performance plan based on the budget that the board has adopted. And for our quarterly reviews, we only talk about the things where we have concerns about the way things are going or where an item has been completed. For this review, because it's the start of the year, we go through every item. So this will take a little bit of time, but I think it's really important because it's the highest priorities for the district, where we're trying to accomplish in 2021. I think the board is familiar with the way that we do this. We'll be running through the managing director, who has the lead accountability for the specific item. So we'll have folks circulating through. At least this time, we don't have to come up to the desk to do that. We'll be able to do that by picture. We will try to pause between items to give the board an opportunity to ask any questions that you might want to ask. So with that, we're going to start with what has been a standard first objective for us under metrics and targets. I should say it's important to remember that we do this in seven different segments. The segments are tied to our balanced scorecard. So the first segment is committing to the highest level of customer owner satisfaction. And because of the importance of our fiber program to customer owner satisfaction, we start there. Bob Shane, you're up.
Steve, thank you. Commissioners, good morning. Bob Shane, Managing Director of the Fiber Group. I'd like to start out first with Objective 1 and would like to state that we understand the importance of broadband to our residents here in Chelan County, and we really want to do our best to meet their expectations. And to that end, Customer Utility and Fiber have launched a planning and coordination effort to keep us moving in that direction of providing the best possible service to our customer owners, and by doing that, ultimately to optimize our build strategies to meet the targets and goals that I'm about to speak to. Some of those strategies involve lessons learned, things that have worked well in the past and things maybe haven't worked so well, so we're taking those into consideration. We're also looking at developing metrics that are more appropriate for what we do internally to make sure that we're on track and that we catch deviation or variation quickly in the program so we get back on track. And I believe John Stoll will be speaking to some of this in a little more detail later on in the presentation. So starting with the fiber expansion premises path, another way to say that is bringing fiber available to a customer owner. We are targeting 936 new premises in 2021. Those areas for consideration are in the Manson area, Leavenworth area, Cashmere, and the Wenatchee area. And that's consistent with what we've done in the past, incremental growth of our program, both in what we call the expansion and the infill. The service interval is important to us. That's a direct indicator of how well we are responding to our customer needs. The service interval is 10 days. That's the time interval between when the service request comes into us and when it's pushed out to the service provider for them to do their role. We're struggling to get that down to 10 days, a number of reasons for it. But again, as I mentioned, we're working with Customer Utility to see if we can't optimize our performance to get that number closer to 10 and possibly exceed it in the future. And then the fiber take rate is that we're anticipating 54% by the end of this year. We're pretty happy with that in a typical overbuild area. That's pretty good. It can get better. We did implement a marketing program that seems to be effective, but we are shooting for 54% by the end of the year, and we're on track to meet our desired 55% in 2024, which Tom will reset what that might be going forward. So with that, I'll pause and see if there's any questions from the commission.
I'd like to actually add something real quick before we go to the commission, which is there are a couple of areas here where in some respects, we're out of order, but for a good reason. What you're not seeing is the end of year conclusion for 2020 that leads to the 2021 plan, because we don't actually conclude all those metrics until we bring forward the financial metrics that you'll see in February. So there'll be a full review of 2020 in the February timeframe. This is one area that we did fall short this year. Our fiber expansion premises passed and our installation service interval The fact that we have these metrics, we knew that there were problems. We reported them to the board earlier in 2020. And there have been changes made, including a reorganization, to help create more focus in the organization, bring more resources, basically, to address this area to give us a better chance of hitting these goals in 2021. On the other hand, the fiber take rate is exceeding expectations. We are getting more folks signing up. And you can tell Bob's goals for this year at 54%, when we're shooting for 55% by 2024, indicates that we're on a path right now to exceed that goal and to achieve it earlier than originally planned. With that, I'll pause and see if there's any questions from the board. Okay. We'll move next to an item that is in my bailiwick, the strategic initiatives with respect to the strategic plan. This is not a year in which we're developing a strategic plan, and so on those years, we do an annual report to what we call strategy partners in April. We plan to do that again, to do a check-in about how we're doing in terms of implementing the strategic plan. And we also have goals with respect to developing five-year priorities and metrics early in the year that helps to develop or helps to provide the foundation for our five-year business planning process. And as we have done in the past, we expect to provide quarterly status updates on the 2021 district performance plan, following up on how we're doing on the measures that we're talking about here today.
All right. Good morning, Commissioners. Justin Erickson, Managing Director of District Services. It's a pleasure to be here with you this morning and go through these items. The next one is mine, item 5, administer the annual public power benefit program. It's a number of sub-items under this, including identifying projects for remaining 2021 funds. The remaining funds are $600,000, and we have a target there of June. We do actually anticipate coming before you much earlier than that, with some options. Item B, complete program outreach to local agencies and nonprofits. As you're aware, we, based on discussion with the board in December, we elected to defer outreach because of COVID challenges and media restrictions. So we'll reevaluate that come springtime and hopefully be able to get out and engage in the community in a very effective way. Later in the year. Following that, we will present to you items for potential consideration for 2022 funding. And then we'll do a closed out presentation like we traditionally do towards the end of the year regarding any funding remaining, and also, of course, provide you an update on ongoing efforts and projects that you have approved.
Commissioners, this is Bob Shane again, Managing Director of Fiber. Completed selected public power benefits projects. Again, we're looking to expand to 85% by 2026. We are on track to meet 78% by the end of 2021. So things are looking good in that perspective.
And on item 6B, we have a goal of issuing 2,500 day-use park passes. We far exceeded that goal in 2020. Particularly because of the interest in our facilities with COVID and people getting outside. So I think we'll hopefully more than meet that expectation this year as well.
Morning, Commissioners. Kirk Hudson, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission. I've got the next public power benefit project. You heard about the service center earlier, and we're also building facilities at Rock Island and Rocky Reach. And item C there is substantial completion of the Rocky Reach Discovery Center by mid-year. We're shooting for the end of June.
Good morning, Commissioners. John Stoll, Managing Director of Customer Utilities. I have item 7, which basically speaks to working with our county partners when it comes to growth and things of that nature. We have two goals. 7A is a meeting we hold every year where we get together with a lot of the leads and the agencies and the counties and the cities and just talk about what's going on, what is our growth, what do we see, where are things we can collaborate together. So that will be later in September. And then secondly, we have a goal to develop a strategy to engage Chelan County on looking at the franchise agreement that we have in place. It's been in place probably 50 years, and it's due for a little freshening up. So we'd like to see what we can do to work with them on that, and that's by year end.
Commissioners, I have items 8 and 9. Item 8 refers to the adoption of a long-term management plan for Arundo River Park. We have this in the performance plan for 2020. But at the request of the port, it was deferred because of COVID and because of the consolidation of the port districts. And so we do expect to complete this endeavor this year and look forward to working with the Regional Port Authority to reach that long-term plan for both parties. And item 9, execute parks, ONN, operation, maintenance, and capital plans. Ensuring compliance and that we meet all of our commitments. The goal for this year is to really take a hard look at our spending trends for the last 5 years and make projections for the next 5-year period. As you are aware, we've successfully implemented been able to replace a number of boat launches and moorage docks and other facilities, and so this is an ideal time to take a look at where we're at and where we're going when it comes to parks.
Item 10 is associated with our efforts to be a leader in innovation in the hydropower industry in support of the Hydropower Research Institute. Our goal is to add another contributor this year to the Institute.
Item 11 speaks to our outreach strategies for low-income and Latino-Hispanic customer owners. And the sub-items speak to that in a couple of different ways. Item A is our kind of annual engagement effort, and we have a goal there of hitting 15 events or modified events based on gathering restrictions. And we've had quite a bit of practice of that in 2020, so we'll be able to effectively deliver our messaging regardless of what challenges we face. Item D speaks more specifically to the effort, our collaborative effort for low-income energy efficiency programming. So we'll work with other district members on that and making sure that we involve a diverse group of individuals in the community as we evaluate that program.
If I recall, on item 12 last year, 2020, we started the future education program for hydropower. And we're continuing that in 2021, and our goal is to have another virtual conference, if you will, for teachers across the state. And our goal is to do that by the end of the month of October.
Commissioners, we're now moving into objective two, and I have the first one regarding reliability. The first one is our goal for electric service reliability. That's the SAIDI goal, which stands for System Average Interruption Duration Index. We've got a rolling average goal of 42 minutes per customer. That's a step down from the 49.1 we had over 2020. The second one is looking at our water system integrity, just the number of leaks per 100 miles. That's our goal is less than 20 for the year per 100 miles.
Commissioners, I have the next two, number 3 and number 4, network system composite uptime of 5 nines. That's an industry standard target. We expect to meet that throughout the year. That's an indication of our resiliency and redundancy of our core network. The optical line termination, terminal link optimization, is really an indicator of how efficient we're running our network. So we want to keep it at 90% or just below so that we get the most optimum performance out of our network. And we expect to maintain that target throughout the year.
Item 5 is our hydro capability metric. You can see it's in the 74% range for 2021. This is on our way to get back to 89% by 2024. And we don't start hitting the 80s with our current outage schedule until next year in 2022.
And I'll just add, this is another area where our performance, we did not hit our target for 2020, and we are redoing our strategy basically to try to make sure that we head towards that 89% goal, reflecting the metrics as they have played out over the course of the last year.
Good morning, Commissioners. Rob Davis, Interim Managing Director of Energy Resources. Item 6 here is for implementing our Customer Energy Solutions Work Plan, various items for energy efficiency and electric vehicles and other customer energy management. The first is the familiar target of 2 average megawatts of energy efficiency that we're planning to acquire this year. Second sub-item there is to implement the low-income, high-energy burden program. We plan to complete our community and public outreach in the first half of the year and then bring that back in and quickly incorporate it into our program design so that we can move forward with implementation in the second half of the year. And the third item is to bring to you by the end of the year the behavioral program design for approval. This will be looking at better ways to provide conservation and energy efficiency to our customer owners, implementing some of the tools and potential information that we can get from the advanced metering program and some other data analytics.
Item 7, the next several lines here are associated with our goals for working on modernizing and repairing units at both Rocky Reach and Rock Island. 7 is associated with Rocky Reach and trunnion bushing replacements on C127. You can see our plan is to get through 4 units this year. Moving down to item E, there's a key milestone there associated with the large units. If you recall, we put a pause on the large units to focus on the C127 bushings, and so we're working on design right now for the water-filled hubs for converting those units, C1011, starting next year. So the metric here is to approve the design for those new components in those hubs. Item 8, associated with Powerhouse 1 modernization. You can see our schedule there to return 10. B4 and B7 to service first quarter this year. I can already say that that's going to be a huge challenge for us to do that in all of the first quarter. And then B5 return to service in the second quarter. Item 9 is associated with our Powerhouse 2 modernization efforts. We would be expecting to bring back the guaranteed maximum price amendment to the board, shooting for first quarter. And you might recall, this is one that also we had a goal to complete in 2020. The design build process learning curve, plus the amount of time it's taken to try and negotiate a long-term warranty has caused this one to move over into 2021.
I have item 10, Commissioners. It speaks to advancing the district strategy at state and federal levels with emphasis areas noted there. Sub-item A speaks to getting value for hydropower by educating state and federal elected officials and continuing to pursue the core tenets of our reinvigorating hydropower effort. B. Is reaching agreement on our 2022 legislative priorities. That, of course, would occur at the end of the year with Tri-Commission and other stakeholders. C, secure legislative framework for broadband funding for unserved areas. Certainly a very high priority for this year. Next, secure wildlife wildfire legislation that addresses dangerous tree removal. E, your likelihood of clean energy fund or carbon revenue distribution. And finally, secure funding for dried in wastewater project. So very busy year. We look forward to engaging on these efforts and keeping you updated.
Commissioners, John Stoll, I have item 11. It speaks to developing the second source of water, working with the Regional Water Committee. As you've been informed through the year, we meet together, pretty much Ron Slabaugh and the board representative and the Regional Water Committee to bring up issues. So we'll continue that through this year. Secondly, I think you're aware, too, that we've struggled on the Chelan County side to find a very productive aquifer that we could utilize. So I think we're about at the end of exhausting those options. So we anticipate by year end regrouping on that and evaluating what would be potential next steps for another source of redundancy and supply. So more to come on that. Number 12, I have that as well, and that's executing on the coordinated accelerated fiber expansion as well as the make ready. Bob has spoke to this already, but we do have the goal of 936 premises. So we have a goal by the end of Q1 to regroup on that to confirm or revise that target. Second one is the goes throughout the year, and that's to achieve that goal through the annual premise pass-by and the appropriate make-ready. C is something we'll be working over the first part of the year with the goal to really flesh out our metrics as how we track the progress on a wide variety of fronts. So we will be working on that with the goal of June 30th to have that completed. And the last one, that looks to the next year and beyond as the acceleration of the expansion area to see where fiber has plans to go and weave that into our business planning and our work planning elements for the 2022 work plan. And believe it or not, that's usually by the end of May that we need to have that information.
I want to speak to 12A for just a second because it's a bit unusual the way we've done this. We do have a target. You heard that earlier, the first metric that we discussed, the 936 for premises passed. But we're also in the midst of implementing this reorganization, and there needs to be communication between the fiber business unit and customer utilities to really nail down what is the plan for 2020. So this is creating that room for that conversation to take place and bring that to a conclusion in the first quarter of this year and then report back to the board.
Commissioners, I've got the next four items. Number 13, execute relicensing plan for the Rock Island project. We're going to finalize the project economics model in June. Complete a feasibility study and develop next steps for the Horan area, part of our early action effort. Item C, complete initial consultation document and begin the formal work groups. That will happen in the third quarter. And finally, D, finalize site suitability and engage with Chelan County on potential Malaga Park, which is another one of our early action efforts. We will be providing you an update on relicensing in February, and so we will cover some of these items and provide an update on the overall schedule and some important personnel items as well. Number 14, implement long-range facilities plan. Rock Island facility construction complete. We are in the final home stretch there. I think the overall project is about 92-93% complete. So look forward to wrapping up Rock Island facilities construction in the second quarter of this year. Rocky Reach construction, substantial completion of CM22 and CM24 buildings by the end of the year. Of course, we talked about the Discovery Center earlier during this update. And then with the Service Center construction, you received an update earlier this morning. In terms of metrics for 2021, we hope to be at the top out of the structure, so the final floor of Building A, have that completed by August. and the top-out structure of buildings B through G by the end of the year. So significant facilities work, and including completion in one case in 2021. Number 15, facilitate the productive reuse of Fifth Street campus in a way that builds community and promotes economic development. We look forward to continued collaboration with the Port of Chelan County and the City of Wenatchee, and we're working on the RFP effort for site redevelopment. B, evaluate proposals and complete negotiations for purchase and sale agreements with developers. So optimistically, by the end of the year, we would have something in place for the redevelopment of this site. Moving down. Number 16, implement alternative contracting and delivery methodologies for qualified projects. Dan spoke to this earlier today, and how effective these alternative contracting and delivery methods have been for us with facilities projects in particular. As it currently stands, when we pursue alternative contracting and delivery methods, there's an application process and an approval process that we have to go through with the state. With the completion of the Rock Island facilities project later this year, we do have an opportune time to seek certification from the state with a successful project completely under our belt. And so this item speaks to that effort. And we would engage the state, go through that process, hopefully obtain certification, and then we could engage in these projects on an ongoing effort, saving that step, which is really significant to complete those applications, go before the review committee, and it utilizes quite a bit of internal resources as well as external consultants. So we will be evaluating that and hopefully obtain that certification this year.
Item 17 is harden our transmission system to protect against fire and weather. You might recall that was an objective that was teed up at the prior strategic plan. We're continuing our efforts there. The two main areas we've identified as concerns for customer impacts are the Chelan, Manson, and Plain Lake, Wenatchee areas. And so for 2021, item A there, we're focused on completing the procurement of the steel structures and beginning to rebuild the Chelan Manson line before the end of the year. We certainly wouldn't complete that reconstruction by the end of the year, but it's to begin that construction effort. And then item B here is focused on the Plain Lake Wenatchee area, and that's to work with the community efforts for fire risk mitigation and select an overarching approach that's supported by the community.
Commissioners, moving to 18, we have implemented a fire risk management strategy that recognizes the increasing level of risk that we're all seeing. Item A is develop a non-reclose and power shutoff program proposal targeting very high-risk areas. You may recall several months ago, Steve led a discussion around that. So as we speak, there's work being done to advance that, but that would be brought back by mid-year, early July. The second one is to reach an agreement with Cascadia Conservation District to implement a partnership grant that we've been working together on. That would the goal of that grant would be to support funding for more fire risk mitigation in very high risk areas, and that's by the end of Q1. Moving into 19, we have several goals on improving distribution system reliability. As we've discussed, we're shooting for a first quartile. Over the years, item A is to continue to complete the underground cable replacement based on the highest priorities. Item B is to refresh and recalibrate when we look at our reliability targets and update accordingly. Last year was really the first heavy lift of really drilling deep into what our options were. And again, we want to keep looking at that and fine-tuning it as appropriate. That is by the end of August. C, we want to award a new vegetation management contract. by February 1st, and we pretty much have completed that goal with the new contractor being onboarded right now. D is to draft a new vegetation management plan with the resources we're putting into vegetation management, as well as continued working with a consultant on a number of recommendations when looking at our overall plan. That is by the end of September. Item E is to complete a four-year pruning and two-year interim cycle on 300 miles of overhead power lines within our system, and that's by year end, as well as item F, which is to inspect 300 miles of transmission and distribution power lines in areas that are elevated when it comes to fire risk, and that's by the end of July.
I would like the board to know that particularly that first item, we had originally planned to do about 5 miles of underground cable replacement a year to achieve our goal of top quartile reliability standards. We had a conflict with respect to trying to hit our fiber expansion goals and decided to put the fiber expansion goals as the higher priority here. Not giving up on the top quartile distribution reliability goal, but just recognizing that from what we heard through strategic planning and what we've heard from our board, that fiber expansion is the highest, is a higher priority right now.
Thank you, Steve. So I have item 20 as well that really speaks to a lot of the work we have revolving around expanding our substations, not only building, but planning and siting. So we have six goals there. Number one is to update our five-year substation plan. Commissioners, have you seen from some of the load updates, you know, that's a bit of a moving target depending upon where growth is going. So every year we want to take a look at our priorities and make sure they still make sense or do we need to adjust. So that's by the end of June. We have a couple of goals, B and C, which are really speaking to both the Leavenworth Bavarian Station as well as the North Shore of Chelan on both an outreach and then completing the civil design. Item D is to energize the new Holly Street substation. That too is by the end of June. And then item E is to energize the new OMI station that's being actively constructed by the end of September. And then item F, looking at the Wenatchee substation, that's the one that's just south of Pybus where we plan to expand that. We want to have that project plan developed and put in place by the end of March.
I'm going to cover item 21 for all the business units there, and it's essentially the same goal. You might recall from the budget presentations, we've got a very aggressive capital plan. Our plant is the infrastructure around the district that provides services to our customers, and so there's a lot of value there, and our goal is to execute 80% of our budget on schedule for those projects.
Good morning, Commissioners. This is Lorna Klemanski, Managing Director of Human Resources. As in past years, I'll partner with External Affairs to provide input into state legislative processes on employment-related matters. And as part of that, we will partner with WAPUTA to provide input on at least one item of interest to both the district and other public utility districts.
Commissioners, I'm going to kick it off for the balanced scorecard objective number 3, protect natural resources impacted by operations. Under 1, successfully meet hydro license requirements. Includes a variety of metrics, operating at seasonal fish spill targets, having our contracts in place to meet our hatchery production targets, and then funding of the tributary component for our no net impact obligation. Under 2, develop an implementation compliance plan as required for anticipated temperature TMDL issuance by EPA and resulting plans by Department of Ecology. We are eagerly awaiting more information on that and are ready to engage.
Commissioners, I have number 3, and that speaks to completing the dry and wastewater capital improvements per the schedule that's been lined out with Ecology. So by the end of March, we want to have an understanding and agreement with Ecology on the Dryden path forward to understand the magnitude and the total project costs. As we've discussed in the past, this does have a pretty steep price. It's about $3.5 million. Currently, we're doing applications for funding and received a little bit of good news this week that that project is high on the list from a recommendation from Ecology to receive grant funding as well as low-interest loans. So more to come on that. Item B then is to, once we get a better feel for what we could possibly receive in both grant funding and other potential appropriations, that we look at that total project cost and come back to the board by the end of May on what that looks like.
Item 4 speaks to our continued work with the Department of Ecology regarding the water quality standards for the Chelan River and our pursuit of successfully obtaining a water quality rule change through the use attainability analysis process. That process is now in Ecology's hands, and we are engaging with them as they begin outreach and the public process, which should start in the spring of this year.
Item 5 is to comply with that NPDES there stands for National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, but we would expect to get a permit this year for the hydros related to oil, and so once we get that, our plan is to be in compliance with it by the end of the year.
Item 6 is implementing federally mandated programs and studies at our projects for aquatic species. The main sub-item there is the pit take study that we have underway for bull trout. This is the second year of the three-year study, and that has been approved and sanctioned by the Rocky Reach Fish Forum. Number 7, execute plan to conduct 10-year HCP project survival studies at Rock Island and Rocky Reach. For this year, we hope to complete the survival study at Rock Island, and then we would complete the study design for Rocky Reach in this year and be prepared to conduct the survival study for Reach in 2022. Number 8, using the results of our investigations, we will continue to upgrade and install infrastructure, implement processes to manage our water rights program, and show compliance with our water rights across the district. Subsection A refers to successfully completing or resolving outstanding issues on at least 3 water rights. And we will do that by the end of the year.
And the final item, commissioners, we will be implementing the previously approved electric vehicle strategy in the first half of the year. We'll be conducting market research and collecting charging station data, and then using that to develop a rate for board approval by the first meeting in December.
And good morning, Commissioner Kelly Boyd, Chief Financial and Risk Officer. And it's my pleasure to start us off for objective number 4, ensure financial stability, starting on page 10. So our metrics for financial stability include our 4 overarching district-wide metrics of debt coverage, debt leverage, liquidity, and days cash on hand. And our targets here are the same targets as laid out in our 5-year strategic planning process. We also have a metric for retiring our debt, both through our scheduled principal payments, which is just the normal, you know, principal we pay every year based on the bond schedule. And then we also pay a small chunk at 6 months in advance to help with debt coverage requirements and do a little bit of savings And then this year is unique because we do have a large anticipated pay down for some funds that we borrowed last year as part of our debt refinancing that we did and new debt issue that we maintained last year for liquidity in the uncertainty of COVID. And we do plan to pay those funds off this year. So together, all three of those make up our $110 million target for scheduled principal payments this year.
I have the next few commissioners. Number six, actively participate in electric markets development. There is a great deal of activity in the Western Interconnection around various aspects of wholesale electricity marketing. Subsections under number six, file comments and proceedings of high priority for hydropower. There will be several activities both in the renewable arena and in the resource adequacy and capacity arena. So we want to make sure that hydropower is appropriately considered and valued for its characteristics. Sub-item B, achieve CAISO governance review committee recommendation of satisfactory to plan. Although there is work to find alternatives for CAISO as the organized market in the West, it is currently the large player and evaluating changes to its governance structure for its expanded market. So we want to make sure that we are heavily involved there so there is viable alternative. Item C, complete PGP evaluation of market structure evolution in the West. There's a renewed effort following the August blackout to look at alternatives to the CAISO for organized markets or other wholesale structures here in the West. And we will be supporting PGP's efforts and hopefully getting at a broader group of utilities and stakeholders to participate and examine alternatives. And item D, we will continue to participate in California forums regarding resource adequacy and capacity. This, again, had renewed interest based because of the power shortage event that happened in California this summer. Item seven relates to efforts here in the Northwest. Continue to work on the power pools, Northwest Power Pools Resource Adequacy Program. So we're hoping to complete by the end of the third quarter the design of the primary programs before showing an operational resource adequacy and also complete design of the governance for the power pool program such that it will be able to pass muster and get us with FERC and get us quickly implemented that resource adequacy here in the Northwest. Moving down to item eight, we are going to continue to take a lead on regulatory proceedings that impact the energy market, primarily CETA. We have some rulemakings regarding the compliance window for CETA and for the way that coal is treated for portfolio purposes that both have an impact on our portfolio. Be involved in those. Item nine, no-go extension on the real-time agreement. This is where PowerX provides our real-time services for us buyers in 2022. So we will first be undertaking an analysis of the benefits of either continuing that agreement or comparing it to alternative real-time service options. Following that, by the end of the year, getting approval from the general manager for real-time services proposal following the expiration of that agreement.
Next up is the item that we've had for quite a while with respect to Columbia River Treaty, and we keep the same target, although we have not been successful at it so far, that the United States government will provide notice to terminate the power provisions of the Columbia River Treaty in 2021.
And back to me, commissioners, on item 11, for stabilizing and enhancing electric revenues from our wholesale sales. Though Steve is the lead on item A, I will talk to agency with our auction as we do every year or in most years. Item E will be submitting bids and at least two requests for proposals here in the region. We're finding that that is the preferred route for a number of the investor-owned utilities. We want to make sure that we're able to get in on those opportunities. And item F, we will continue to implement the Alcoa contract, meeting all contractual requirements under that agreement. And for item 12, we're to improve our existing operational planning projects and programs. So we will continue to work to define and evaluate a coordination strategy this year. Coordination continues to be a high priority for us as we collaborate with our neighbors and regional partners. We're going to try and gain agreement with BPA on next steps for coordination and on regional agreement on our headwater benefit strategy as well.
Item D is associated with our Two Dam Independence Project, Phase 2. One of the goals we have for that continuous improvement effort is to complete a business case for whether we go all the way to the unit dispatch level. To this point, we're at the plant level, and then we're deciding what's at stake here for going all the way to each generator.
Then moving on to 13, our ongoing goal to maintain or enhance our AA bond rating. We do that through our annual presentations to the rating agencies, sharing our key information to have them continue our evaluation as a strong credit. We also do an annual benchmarking against our peers to ensure that our metric targets are where they need to be. And then new for this year is item C, which is establishing a strategy for what you'll hear as ESG reporting. It's environmental, social, and governance reporting, where it's really expanding the reporting of an entity to include more than just financial, shocking to me, but to provide this expanded information to investors and the public interested in your financial and performance in these other areas. So do have a new goal this year to establish a strategy of how we can best expand in those reporting arenas. We do a little bit of it currently, and this is to look at how we'd like to expand on that. And then item 14 is to receive a clean audit opinion with no material deficiencies on our normal schedule by the end of April. Moving on to item 15, is to refine and execute the business planning cycle, which is an annual goal we have, and it's called the cycle because it's actually never ending. So this is a key part of that cycle of sharing our plans for this year, and we'll continue that evolution by drafting our plans for the next five-year cycle and have those draft plans in the summer, and then we iterate through them with the near final plans presented to the board in the first meeting of October, with the goal of our five-year plans being finalized by the end of October. And that's a critical date because that provides the foundation for us to do our one-year 2022 budget with the goal of having that approved by the board in the first meeting of December.
Commissioners, I have 16 implement long-term rate plans consistent with the strategic plan over the 2020-2024 timeframe. The first one, A, is to present to the board policy options for assessing a standardized proportional share of infrastructure needs as part of a new electrical service and line extension. Something similar to what we do on water and wastewater. We had started that effort this year, but with COVID-19 and a bit of a struggle with the consultant we were using, we've moved this into 21 to continue on with that. So we anticipate bringing that forward by the end of September.
And the next item is the annual rate adjustments for electric, water, wastewater, and fiber. Those are planned for June 1, consistent with the outcome of the strategic plan.
Commissioners, this is Bob Shane. I'll take 17, which is a fiber business unit. We'll
achieve financial solvency by 2025. That goal, one of our key metrics is operating expense coverage ratio. When we get 80%, we think we're there. We're targeting 74.9% in Q4 of this year. So we are on track.
Commissioners, we're on objective 5 now to continuously improve efficient, effective, compliant, risk-assessed, and resilient operations. I'll take the first item here, and I'll cover it for all the operating units that are listed there. This one is associated with our operations and maintenance budget with a target for us to come in at the end of the year somewhere between 90 and 105% of the budget. The key here is to manage within our budget because these numbers are tied to rates.
And this is Lorna Klemanski again with items 5.6 and 5.7. They are related items to reach a tentative agreement with the IBEW on a collective bargaining agreement with In Authority. We will talk more about this later today. And then the related item is to achieve board ratification of that agreement. And notably, we ended up by negotiating a one-year agreement. So we will be back at the bargaining table before the well before the end of 2021.
Commissioners, I have the next two items. Item 8 is in reference to our purchasing and contracting services department and their ability to effectively and timely manage the workload consistent with our projected capital and O&M budget. And so we've got a number of process improvements that we're working on to make sure we can implement this this plan effectively and on time. Subsection A refers to one in particular, which is an effort that we've engaged in to have processing surveys completed at the end of contracting engagements. And it's an opportunity for us to review and look at opportunities for improvement internally. And so our target is to implement those recommendations within 60 days and to have those surveys completed timely after those efforts. 9 speaks to physical asset protections and ensuring that we're in compliance with North American Electric Reliability Council standards and that we have completed our threat vulnerability assessments that address our project priorities relative to physical safety and security.
Commissioners, I have number 10, and that's annually maintaining our and updating our utility policies. We primarily do that through item A, which is we have a standing rate committee, or a policy regulation committee that meets quarterly. They look at relevant issues of the day, and if they feel changes are warranted, they make proposals that ultimately could lead to board for approval as needed. So that's ongoing throughout the year.
I'm going to take the whole next area with respect to cybersecurity issues. That's another big year for us with cybersecurity. We'll be continuing to have bi-monthly cybersecurity meetings internally, executive management level, and be reporting to the board regularly on the output of those. Big issue for us in 2021 is there is a national exercise called GridX. We have been an observer in the past. We're going to be an active participant in 2021, engaging fully in the GridX exercise that will take place for a couple of days in November. With respect to these other items, I'm going to highlight a couple of things. First of all, there is C2M2. C2M2 is developed by the Department of Energy. It's Cybersecurity Capabilities Maturity Model, which allows you to assess your maturity with respect to cybersecurity protections. What we have been doing for the last few years and we'll be doing again this year is using C2M2 as the means to determine our priorities for activities to try to continue to mature our cybersecurity practices. We'll be doing that in the three primary business units for business systems, operations systems, and the fiber systems. And there's a couple other things I would want to highlight here as well. We will be doing our annual penetration test to test to see if the ability for external parties to be able to get into our systems. And importantly, because so much of the risk today is around spear phishing, we'll continue our annual employee awareness training and testing. And with that, I'll turn it to Lorna.
Thank you, Steve. This is Lorna Klemanski again. And we have been working in human resources for a few years on finding ways to moderate the trend of increasing healthcare costs. Last year, we identified 10 potential innovations and narrowed that list to 3 to develop and begin implementing and negotiating in 2021. So we will develop and implement those, or develop the implementation and negotiating strategies this year.
Let's just take a second and say we'll be welcoming Rhonda to her first effort and going through this process. I know she's done some training with folks. Rhonda, welcome, Rhonda, and give it a shot.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate that. Good morning, Commissioners. Rhonda Wilkinson, Director of Safety and Human Performance. So we are now on to section number 6, Advancing Human and Organizational Performance. Under Objective 6, the first area I'd like to discuss is the leading indicators for the safety metrics. Under A, we have a reoccurring goal for business unit attendance at our monthly safety meetings with a target of 80%. With COVID last year, you know, we were challenged to be more creative establishing a process for everyone to be able to attend these meetings. And so the safety meetings used to be in-person meetings, and it's been changed to more these unique video recorded meetings to get participation. B is also a recurring goal. The senior team safety visits is one of our engagement activities with district employees. So we've set a target of 32 visits by the senior team. C is a new item. When we have a safety event, the business units are asked to implement the corrective action items from those events within 90 days. And so the target that we're looking at right now is 50%. The next one is D. This is also new. So we will be conducting a minimum of 5 learning teams. So learning teams are used after a significant incident has occurred, or it can also be a proactive team learning, or learning team. So we use the learning teams to help us, you know, increase the system resilience or to help us improve system design. So we will be completing 5 of those this year. The next I will cover is number 2, the lagging indicators. And as commissioners already know, it is so important that we continually strive to reduce these numbers year after year, since these are the numbers that show what our actual injuries are. So the first one is under A of the OSHA recordable cases. So we set this at 24. Last year was 27. B is the overall recordable incident rate. And this is set at 2.22 this year versus the 3.53 in 2020. The C is the lost time incident rate with a target of 0.37 versus the 0.42 last year. And then letter D covers our DART rate, the days away or restricted or transferred, and this is set at the 1.05.
Thanks, Rhonda. This is Lorna Klemanski again, and I have the next 4 items. First is the recruiting metric. Recruiting continues to be critical to ensuring the district's ability to meet its goals, and we've had a goal of filling 90% of new positions approved to fill for a few years. Last year, we missed the goal by only one position, and that one was a very difficult to fill position. And that put us at only 87.5%. So it was like, well, having the goal at 90% meant that the goal was really at 100%. So I discussed that, and we moved that goal just slightly down to 85% this year to allow for the possibility of maybe not filling one position. And then item four, the district is making significant investments in employee development. And with this goal, we are committing to increasing access for job and skills development for each job group. So one of the first steps there is to identify job groups and to prioritize them so that we're providing development opportunities to them according to the number of positions in each group. This goal uses the acronym FTE, which stands for full-time equivalent. So you can think of that as the number of full-time people. And item five, we will also be focusing on leadership development. And as one of the first steps there, we'll work with managing directors to get their guidance on what is needed. The next step is that based on that input, we'll develop a five-year implementation plan. And then while we're doing all of that, we will also continue planning and providing content for two all leadership team meetings in 2021. The next one is item six, and we are committed to diversity, equity, and inclusion, and we're going to continue our efforts in 2021 by educating leaders, and that will include a program at the spring all leadership meeting. We'll also plan for our five-year initiative, and then we'll work with each business unit to identify goals, and we'll select a business unit to partner with on a pilot project for increasing diversity, equity, and inclusion. And actually a goal that's not on this list is that we have been working on an all organization diversity training, and we did part of that yesterday. So we're very excited with how that went. Thank you.
So Rhonda Wilkinson again. So the number seven is discussing the Human Performance Initiative. So there are two items in there. A is to establish a human performance plan by the end of first quarter, and then B is to establish the quarterly metrics, which is also due by the end of first quarter. So as commissioners are already aware, the implementation of human performance began, you know, a few years ago at the district. So this goal is really to finalize a comprehensive and measurable human performance plan to help us continue on and to also just to strengthen our HP journey. So number eight is very exciting. It's about advancing safety excellence by achieving top quartile safety status. So what this means is that we are comparing ourselves to 16 other utilities of similar size that are also members of the American Public Power Association. And so the goal is to consistently be in the top quartile of those 16 utilities. So under sections 8A and B, by the end of first quarter, we will have a top quartile plan, and then we'll also have the quarterly metrics established as well.
Hello, Commissioners. Tracy Yent, and I've been working on COVID. So for 2021, item number nine, COVID-focused senior team meetings occur at least weekly to assure district policies reflect federal and state regulations and guidance protecting employee health while assuring provision of reliable utility services. And we are predicting right now this being going through at least
6/30/2021. Okay, so with item number 10, again, commissioners, I'm sure you're aware the district previously had an objective to develop a plan to identify and address the district-wide arc flash exposure zones and requirements. So in 2020, parts of that plan were completed, and then the 2021 goal is to complete the arc flash labeling and competent person training for the water and wastewater personnel. Then under 10A, we have where the competent person training will be completed for the remaining identified areas. And both of these will be completed before December of this year.
And as we've done in the past, we intend to continue our program to identify folks who are doing a great job at taking personal accountability and identifying nominees and awarding them on a monthly basis.
Good morning, Commissioners. Eric Walkless, General Counsel. I'll start us off on the Seventh metric, encourage innovation. Item one is a continuation of our ongoing governance and risk compliance solution. This year, we will be hoping to complete the conversion from all of our compliance tracker applications into the new GRC solution. And this year, we will also be implementing the expansion of GRC into the health and safety areas per plan. You'll recall that we did not make that metric last year. Safety and human resources had nothing else to do in 2020, so we had to shift it to 2021. Hopefully, we're going to get that metric knocked out this year and continue to grow that program enterprise-wide.
And then next, item two, our customer information system, or also known as CIS. In 2020, we are really focused on the implementation that was accomplished, and now our focus is transitioning to ensuring stability of the system. You know, a lot of times when you go live, there are things that you have workarounds or are doing not in the optimum stage, but you can still go live. So those are the things we're working on through stability. And the first goal is to engage a third party to assess where we are at that, to ensure that we have the appropriate items identified. We'd accomplish that by Q1 and then spend the remainder of the year executing on that plan within the milestones and deadlines established in that assessment.
Commissioners, I have item three, that's advanced metering infrastructure, or AMI. We anticipate bringing forward in Q1 a contract for the board to review and approve. With that, we have a three-month window where we would like to finalize the project plan for establishing that project, and that would be by the end of June. The second goal, B, is to finalize the communication plan and associated materials by the end of September. And then C, we would start to begin to see actual work in the field, primarily at the high-level communication device locations and planning for the initial phase test meters out to kind of proof out the system, and that would be by the end of October.
Item four is our goals associated with our advanced distribution management system. This is part of the technology roadmap effort. We've got two goals there. One is to turn over the outage management system to our operations team by the end of the year. And then the other one is to identify our goals for 2022 for the advanced distribution management system platform by the middle of this year for the business planning process.
Moving on to item five, our Geographic Information System, or GIS. This is also one of those foundational systems that's really important as we build all of our technology on top of our strong foundations. And as part of that, we are going to conduct a district-wide GIS business process improvement effort. We are utilizing a third-party engineering firm to supplement our resources and our expertise, and anticipate doing that in a couple of phases, with the first phase being completed by the end of Q3. It is a district-wide effort, and it's one that would benefit by being able to do it by all getting in a room and hashing things out. So we are prepared if that's not a way that we're able to do it, but that is influencing our timing on our planning here to hopefully incorporate the ability to do that into our phase one completion. And then phase two, we will have a decision point there of moving on further based on how phase one turned out or changing the plan. So phase one and phase two through the end of the year. And then we also have a goal to develop further our GIS capabilities to apply them to our vegetation management practices, which will also support the wildfire hardening. So really valuable additional functionality here. Moving on to item six is our focus on customer mobile apps. And the first area of focus is completing this year a vendor contract that selects the customer engagement platform that we would use. So all of the analysis, alternatives, negotiations, everything that go into that, the identification of the needs, to have that happen so that we could have that step in place, which is needed for us to be able to build, start building and implementing customer mobile features starting next year. So important step to complete this year so that we can start having more functionality available in 2022. And then we also have that element for continuing to advance the accuracy of our mobile app that we currently have named Current, which is our river level customer app. And we have a goal to add actual sensor data to that customer app just to help improve the accuracy of the estimates in that tool. And then moving on to item seven, our business intelligence, data analytics, and district digital transformation. This is one that's really across the district benefit, and we had tried to focus our targets to partner with other areas throughout the district, including generation and transmission, distribution, and even district-wide. So our first goal is to implement a generation and transmission dashboard that shows the metrics that let us know what is a what is operational excellence. And then that dashboard gives that quick identification if something is starting to go outside of the norm for early detection and recognition that something may need attention. So establishing that dashboard with generation and transmission will be by the end of Q3. And then working with our distribution system is to complete the report-related milestones for the implementation of the Oracle Utility Analytics module, or you also hear us say OUA, and that will actually help with our customer information system stability because it would be generating reports through a different means rather than working hard on the source system. So that will be a really beneficial implementation to have completed by the end of the year and really benefit our distribution system and our customer service area. And then the last item in this one is to develop a enterprise portal for all employees to be able to have access to the tools and information and guidance and everything that goes around our kind of business intelligence and data analytics to enable lots of employees to be part of the data analytics community, which is the way that we can be most successful for the district as a whole. And that would be an example of our CPO winners today of being in data analysts in their own area and using the tools available to develop a decision-making based on data, which is really great. And that was a really great example of that.
Commissioner Smith, just want to check. We're a little bit over time, but we're close to finish. Should we just go ahead and finish, or would you prefer to take a break?
How to unmute. I apologize. I'm wondering, we've got it appears a couple of people from the public on telephone. I could be wrong. There's two unidentified callers, and I want to make sure you provide them time. So how much time do you have left?
I'm guessing we're about 5 minutes. We're into our last item and just a few more to go.
Okay, let's finish it and then do provide some time for public input before we go to lunch recess.
Okay.
Commissioners, Bob Shane here on the fiber customer portal replacement. It's a very important project for us. It's basically replacing our aging system that we have in place now that's no longer supported and proving to be inadequate.
what we're moving toward is a standard-based solution set that's operating on a current supported software platform. The importance of this is it maintains all of our customer information and all of our specific data that's important for us on maintaining an understanding of the connection between the customer and our network, along with billing information, customer information, device information. So it's very important to us. And we expect to have that up and fully operational by the end of the year.
Item number nine is maintaining our strong information technology foundation, with the focus for 2021 being on implementing Microsoft Teams functionality. And this is the first four metrics on here all relate to that effort. We're doing it in a phased manner. First, making sure that our internal policies keep up with the technology, things like document retention, content management. Those are all key things to keep up to date on our policies. And then our three phases of implementation include a big chunk completed by the end of this month that provide video, meeting, and mobile capabilities, which will really enhance our capabilities in these COVID times. And then phase two, including additional functionality for collaboration for both internal and external users when we're working, you know, with people throughout the community and our efforts. And then phase three being by the end of the year that provides additional functionality with our phone and with mass broadcasting, like really large meetings of 300 people and more. And then the other two key upgrades for this year will include our SharePoint, which is also a collaboration tool, and updating our email by the end of the year.
Hey, Commissioners, Rob Davis again. I need to close this out with the Energy Resources Innovation Update. The first there, item 10, the Deakin Energy Resource Plan, looking to have a decision on the battery RFP by the end of this quarter. And if approved by the board, we'll work this year to install the battery system up there for Stehekin. Item 11, to implement new solar program as it's on par with the business case for energy efficiency projects and programs that we already follow. So in the first quarter, set up some rebate electronic forms, and then through the remainder of the year, work on marketing the program to our customers and engaging with stakeholders on low-income programs for a solar program. And then final item, item 12 there, investigate and report on the feasibility of new potential energy resources. So a lot of exciting stuff happening in the hydrogen space. We're taking a look at that and what it could mean for the district and examining what opportunities we might have with interruptible loads or non-firm supply.
And commissioners, that does it. So you can see we have a lot of activities. Certainly going to be a busy year for us. Should be, based on our forecast at least, should be our largest year for capital spend since Rocky Reach Dam was built. So we've got a fair amount of things that are going to create value for the long term for customer owners. And we will be reporting to you quarterly on this.
That's a lot to digest. I know I just checked the participant list, and it appears that we only have one person on a phone that is not identified now. If there's any members of the public present that wish to address the commission, I wanted to give you a time before we broke for lunch. We will be coming back at 1 o'clock after lunch for our afternoon session, which we will cover the rest of the items on the agenda. But if anybody wishes to address the commission now before lunch, I would open the phone line for that to occur and remind you that to address the commission, you do need to, we ask that you identify yourself with your address, and that you limit any comments to 3 minutes at the beginning. hearing no one coming forward, I think it's time for us to recess for lunch and come back at 1 o'clock for our afternoon session. We will stand recessed. Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome everybody to the afternoon business session of the January 19, 2021 Chelan PUD Commission meeting. Welcome all. I'd like to remind everybody that generally speaking, as we go through this, if you could keep your speaker on mute, that would be helpful. And I love seeing all the faces at this meeting, and I've said it multiple times, thank you for doing that. For those that may be visitors to our meeting, we will dedicate a time at the end of the business session for public input, and would welcome that input at that time. At this point, I think we'll start right up with our consent agenda. Commissioners, we do have a consent agenda before us. Is there a motion to accept?
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, the same. Motion is carried, and we're moving on to the regular agenda, and I'll hand it off to Steve Wright.
Hey, Randy, this is Steve.
Yes.
Before we get going too far, I'd like to go back to the work of staff this morning to present the plan to us. Yeah, just compliment everybody. You know, that truly is an amazing document that takes, you know, a vision from the top of the organization and watches the organization create goals and specific strategies to accomplish the goals of the district. And I was just really impressed with that. I was impressed with how prepared everyone was. I know a lot of work goes into that. And as one commissioner, I just wanted to share with Steve and the senior management team how much I appreciate the effort that goes into that. And it makes me really feel good that I use that document as an example to other organizations of the importance of understanding an organization's mission and vision and how that goes into creating specific goals and commitments to achieve those goals, and in the long term makes for an organization that is learning and improving and using data. And so just a lot of appreciation from this commissioner on the work that went into that today. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and I'd like to follow up in being in agreement with Commissioner McKenna. During lunch, I just had the same discussion with Joyce Lynn about what a remarkable document that is and what a clear direction it gives us. And it also includes a measuring stick quarterly to see as an organization, you know, what our health is and what our productivity is. And again, my appreciation to everybody. Well done, right direction. Let's just keep moving. But really appreciative.
Thank you for your input on that. That was well said. All right. Steve, regular agenda.
Yeah, can I just check one thing? We missed who made the motion on the consent agenda. We couldn't hear it here. Was that Commissioner Arsenault?
Yes.
Yes, okay, great. All right, good. Thank you for...
Yeah, he's feeling a new sense of freedom to be able to do that.
Okay, so we are back to the regular agenda then. This is agenda item 9. A resolution ratifying field work orders number 1 through 6 and authorizing final acceptance of work performed under bid number 18-85 with Delta Star Incorporated in San Carlos, California. I would note that under our normal procedures, this would have been on the consent agenda, but to us, it's an exciting item, and we thought it was worthy of discussion in front of the board. Chad Rissman will be presenting.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Can everybody hear me?
Yep.
Great. Rebecca is getting a picture up on the screen, actually, that I pretty much took out of the window of my office here. So I get to look over at these mobile substations. Just quickly, so this is a $4.6 million project to purchase two mobile substations. This is the closeout of that. I wanted to talk a little bit about the benefits to our customers, of that, of these purchases and what this means to us. And thank you for your support, commissioners. Before I get into some of the benefits, I just wanted to touch on, there is a change order we, there were several change orders. Most of them were due to scheduling related to COVID factory. These came out of California, and so there was some shutdowns and working through COVID challenges and things going on in the plant. And then in the process, we wanted to change around a piece of equipment through a safety lessons learned, so we made that change. The lessons learned that we had on this is we really would have liked to have gone down to the plant and inspected these prior to them coming up here, but that was obviously would have been a tough call with the travel and things. They came, they arrived here with some damage on them that we might have been able to catch, and so it took us a little longer to get them in service than what we would like to, but they are ready to go, ready for in-service for this winter. So special thanks to Min Dang and the PCS group and a few others that, Wireman and Brian Lau and Vern Matthews and several groups that worked through significant work to get these things ready to go. So, as you know, we've got 38 power transformers in our distribution system, and those are spread out through 34 substations. So we've got several substations, and the substation is really the kind of the heart of the distribution system. And our system's designed radially. So what that means is one of these substations that usually has somewhere in 2,000 to 3,000 electric meters connected to it, providing service for 3,000 or so electric meters. When one of these stations has to be taken offline or something occurs within the station, those 3,000 meters are out of power. So our mobile substations are particularly important for us to be able to put one of these mobile substations in and provide service to those customers. So we purchased two with your support. You can see the red and the blue trailers there. Those are the new ones. The one in the middle is a white trailer that was purchased in 2015. The one that's on the far left is a smaller one, and it can only go in a handful of locations within the district because we've kind of outgrown it. Its size and capabilities just won't work in our substations now. So we have a fleet of three capable and fully rated mobile substations. Appreciate that. It gives us about, with the little one, it gives us about a 10% contingency coverage throughout our substation fleet. We advertised that we were able to get these mobiles in the event that something occurs within a 24-hour period. But the last few times that we've done it on an emergency basis, we've beat that by several hours. So they're very convenient to locate. We're designing our substations now so that they can fit. So that's the number one benefit to our customer owners, to have the contingency plan in the event that one of our stations loses power or needs to be taken out. The second real benefit of these is because our system is designed radially, there are a few locations in the off-season, in the summertime, where we're able to transfer some, and in some generation offline to make it safe for us to be able to perform maintenance. Mobile substation is brought in. Customers are transferred over seamlessly. No interruptions to these mobile substations. They'll hold the customers and continue to provide service for the month or two that we're performing maintenance work. We also, one of the great examples that occurred this last summer when we brought our mobile substation into this Wilka sub. When we did maintenance on that, we identified a part that was decayed, significantly decayed, and we were concerned that it wasn't going to be able to make it through the winter, last through the winter. So we were able to bring the mobile substation in there and provided service into late December. So that's since been fixed and pulled out of there. So provides a great service. The third thing that we haven't had to deploy yet, but it is a great contingency for us, our load forecasts, although we put a lot of time and effort into those, but we could find ourselves in a position where either our load forecasts increase faster than what we, or greater than what we anticipated, or that our new substation delivery gets delayed. And these mobile substations could provide some substation capacity and sort of a roll-in basis if we ever needed to. So I just want to say that thank you to support from commissioners and staff, that these are a great contingency, a significant amount of dollars for these. But as you can see, they're sitting undercover and ready to be deployed at any time. So if there are any questions, I'll take those now.
Commissioners, any questions?
They're impressive pieces of equipment. It's when you're up close to them and you look at the trailer or the amount of equipment on those trailers, you wonder how in the world does that trailer hold all that? John, I also appreciate the patriotic colors, the red, white, and blue. But it's impressive to see these things. It's good.
Any other comments?
I have a question more than a comment. I noticed that there was one of the trailers sitting down at the Skulchuk substation. Is that the one that you were referring to where the piece of decrepit equipment?
That's correct.
This is John. I'd just like to back up what Chad had said. Really appreciate the support. These, you know, there were a couple of years where, you know, I'll sleep a little bit better at night. I'll just put it that way. So, again, appreciate the support.
Commissioners, I would like to make one quick comment, and that's that, you know, leading an organization, what you really want are employees who take the worry home, because if they take the worry home, then you don't have to take the worry home. You know that they've got the personal accountability that's there. The exception to that rule is when you can do something about it and take that worry off their shoulders. And so I think this is one of those cases where Chad and John have been taking the worry home for a lot of years. And so I'll just express again, it's a lot of money. You know, $4.5 million is not cheap, but this is $4.5 million that's well spent in terms of hitting the kinds of reliability targets that we want to have. If we want to be a top tier organization in terms of reliability, you need to have this kind of equipment. So, thank you for your support for this.
So before I call for a vote, I'd just like to make a really brief comment, Chad. I recall vividly when I first got elected as a PUD commissioner some 14 years ago, that key elements of our utility being good in the eyes of the people were keeping the rates low and keeping the lights on. And while it may not be obvious to everybody, I think that these mobile substations do both of those things for a variety of reasons. And I just want to say thank you for listening to the people of Chelan County. I think that's, I look back that people have been supporting what we've been doing for a number of years. And you guys as staff are a key part of why we're looked at with pride at this moment. other comments before I ask for a motion? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve resolution number 9?
I'll make a motion to approve resolution 9 as written.
Second.
To approve resolution 9. Is there any additional comment on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion is carried. All right, manager items.
Okay, we do have a few that we would like to get to today. Want to invite, we'll start with Lorna Klemanski to do a quick update on an item that was a follow-up action item from a previous meeting.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Commissioner Condon had asked that we advertise or promote the Northwest Public Power Association Women in Public Power Conference. Last year, that conference was canceled, and so we didn't do that. But this year, as part of our discussion at the last General Managers Forum about selecting individual development plans, we mentioned the Western Energy Institute Women in Energy Symposium. That's going to be held in November this year. And as we discussed that, I did mention that people should stay tuned on the NWPPA Women in Public Power Conference, because that one usually also occurs right at about the same time in early November. But I haven't found it in the catalog for NWPPA yet, and I did send an email message and left a phone message a couple of weeks ago and didn't get a call back on it yet, and I'm not entirely certain they're actually going to be holding that conference this year. But meanwhile, we will update people as more information becomes available.
Okay. Next up, Tracy Yount's going to give us an update on COVID vaccine issues and how it relates to the district.
Good afternoon. I wanted to first recognize that things are changing literally on a daily basis, and part of what makes it somewhat confusing is the nomenclature used, all the phase designations. And so just to give a little background, the governor's introduced a revised phase approach for vaccine distribution, and there's also a phased approach for reopening the state. So there's different phases called phase A or phase one, depending on what you're talking about, and depending on what the government's working on. So what I was going to give an update on today was the vaccination phases. So back on January 6th, identified that there are some phases. Phase A, where healthcare workers, long-term care, and other workers at risk in healthcare would be getting the vaccine. Phase 1B has further four tiers within that, and inside of that, there's 65 years and older now. That's a new. It was 75 years and older. Now it was changed to 65 years and older, and then high risk. Critical workers, and people with some other illnesses. So that's just phase A and B, and then there are future phases that they haven't defined yet. So we're working with the Chelan Douglas Health District and Confluence Health to understand where some of our critical workers might fit in those phases, and that is a daily discussion work in progress. So the main message there is where our workers fit is a little to be determined, and we are working to reduce our risk to operations due to COVID through vaccinations for mission essential personnel. Then yesterday, the governor announced a new plan for vaccine distribution. They have, or he has, created a Washington State Vaccine Command and Coordination Center. creating public-private partnerships for vaccine distribution. Some of the members include Starbucks, Costco, Microsoft, National Guard, and some healthcare-related unions. A couple of aspects about the announcement yesterday. It adds a mandate for 95% of all vaccines to be administered within one week of receipt. So the goal there is to, once the vaccines come out, they need to be administered right away. It also requires reporting to the state within 24 hours of administering, and that reporting actually starts today. Also, support administration of vaccines on hand for distribution. So there's vaccines on hand, they're not getting out, and so they're creating distribution, three distribution areas, Spokane, Kennewick, and in Bellevue, to try to get the vaccines that those communities have into people's arms. And finally, it establishes four what they're calling high vaccination sites to be set up next week for future distribution, and those sites are in Spokane, Kennewick, Clark County, and then one at the Town Toyota Center in Wenatchee. So we are meeting with the new administrator of CDHD and also Confluence to see how we might support the community's efforts, see what types of opportunities are for the PUD with either facilities or people to support the vaccination program in the community. So that's what we're working on with respect to vaccines right now. Does anybody have any questions?
Is the local vaccine administration office here in Chelan County?
So it's set up right now where CDHD is in charge of coordinating the vaccines, and then Confluence Health and CVCH are actually working to administer or make the vaccines available, and ultimately there will be vaccines made available at Walgreens and I believe Safeway. So we're just in the beginning stages, but it's a group effort right now between CDHD, Confluence, and CVCH.
Thank you.
Okay, if there are no further questions, I'm going to turn to John Stoll for an update on some outages that we had last week due to the wet snow.
Thanks, Steve. Rebecca, did you have that picture? Well, Rebecca's loading that up. Just you certainly fresh in our memory. It was last Tuesday. We had quite the day with the pretty wet, heavy snow that started Monday evening and then accumulated during the night. What's interesting is just looking at the impact to our system. We had just some stats. We had about 91 breaker trips that occurred roughly over, maybe a 36-hour period. So a breaker trip is, that a breaker feeds a feeder, and as Chad recalled, a substation serves about 3,000 residences or meters, and a breaker, there's four breakers in a substation generally, so a pretty significant impact, about 700-800 potential residential meters that experience momentary trips when a breaker fault happens. So we had 91 of those. So system ops certainly was very busy, but certainly that translates into response from the line crews. So it was very widespread. There wasn't really any one area that was escaped it. Wenatchee actually was probably the least impacted. We saw significant impacts up around Cashmere, Shasta, and Leavenworth, Chelan, Eniat. The picture you see right there, that's up off just outside of Manson on a road called Snuffy Smith, and it's a corner transmission structure that runs up the hill, so you can kind of see another pole just about the middle of that frame there. That's the next transmission pole that had broke as well. All total, there were three of them that collapsed. Pretty significant event to respond to something like that. The understanding what happened, I think we're still working on that, but basically this heavy snow had a lot of stress on the system, in as much as it actually pulled out an anchor of a guy pole that helps support that corner pole. And a corner pole is where you have the transmission coming in, taking a 90-degree angle, and then heading up the hill. So once that released, it created this domino effect, and these poles went down. The fourth structure was a fairly large H structure, and it's called an H structure because there's two poles that are supporting a cross arm, so it looks like an H. That one held, but it was pretty precarious. So it was a very delicate operation to restore this. It took quite some time, just with the amount of impact, not only from the transmission line, but there's also distribution circuits that were underneath that. So think of it as a dual-purpose pole. I think one pole was 100 feet tall, I think one was 95, and I think one was 85. So pretty significant infrastructure. And then, as you can see, the crews had to go up and access it, so it entailed even bringing in a small bulldozer to actually create a pathway to go up and work on those structures. So pretty significant. Hats off to the crews. One crew primarily worked round the clock to work on the restoration, and then we supported it as we got near to the end. But again, it was a very eventful day. Interesting enough, Steve had called me up on Monday just glowing about how nice the winter was, and we were talking about, well, we're not out of winter yet, and that night, certainly, we got hit. But again, hats off to the crews. They all was hands on deck for a good full day plus. They had a lot of support. Cody, who was the on-duty supervisor, I know he didn't get much sleep that night. Dan and the rest of his crew really provided a lot of logistical support. Our communications group and our outreach folks did a lot of hands-on calling to especially these customers who were very patient, and we appreciate that, and you know, and wrote it out with us, but we wanted to do everything we could to keep them informed as well. So that's it. I'll stop if there's any questions on it, but again, it was a pretty significant event for us, but we pulled through it. One of the things that was interesting, we had that event, and I was talking to Steve the next day and wanted to know if there were any concerns, and I suggested, well, if we get some very strong winds, that would be a big concern. And sure enough, that night, I think we had 50-plus mile-an-hour gusts that thankfully didn't impact us all that much, but it certainly impacted a lot of utilities around us. I think at one point I saw 500,000 customers out on the west side.
Thank you, John. John, I know up here in Cashmere there were a number of quick flashes at our place, and it was obvious the system was stressed. So kudos to everybody that dove in and did what needed to be done to restore us all.
Well, we'll make sure we pass that on, and we actually had the opportunity as well to support another utility. The wind event I'd mentioned, you know, we escaped that for the most part, but it really did damage throughout the state. The west side and the east side, Avista took a pretty hard hit. I think at one point they had, I think, close to 100,000 customers projected to be out for a long time. And we actually provided some resources to them to help them out and get restored back. In fact, they just got back home and helped them get their system put back up. So that's one thing that's really neat about this industry is we all get together through mutual aid, and this was an example for us to help somebody out as well.
And commissioners, I'll make a public commitment here to not make any more, have any more discussion about weather past or forecasted, at least through the winter season. John's also going to give us an update on cryptocurrency.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. That was the second issue. I don't know how much you follow the price of Bitcoin as one of the cryptocurrencies, but it's taken a tremendous run-up over the past 6-7 months. I think it reached, at one point, over $40,000 a Bitcoin. I think right now it's down around 37,000, but that's still historically a very high price for Bitcoin. I think that logically started having people ask us questions about, well, are we seeing an increase in either mining or applications or things of that nature? To date, we've had a few inquiries. I wouldn't say our phones are ringing off the hook. I think that speaks to a lot of the policies and rates and things that were put in place that have definitely been communicated throughout the industry, and it's good for staff to have that and work with anybody who does have inquiries. Certainly our radar is up if we suspect there may be some underground mining going on that potentially could create stresses on the system, but to date, we haven't seen any of that, but we're definitely very, very keenly aware to keep our eyes open for it and use the tools we have to watch for that. But so far, again, we are getting calls, but one of the things staff is concerned about is with all the work that we have going on, that this doesn't become a big distraction for them. I think we've got, again, good tools in place to describe to any potential applicant that we do have rates and policies and fees. If they're interested, here's where they can go. And what I don't want to see is a lot of talk time from folks who've got a lot of things on their plate, basically dealing with tire kickers from all over the country or the world interested in what we have to offer. But certainly if we do have someone who's has a formal application and is very serious, those are things definitely we want to make sure we're communicating that we're seeing that activity as well.
Okay, not seeing any questions about that. I'm just going to finish with a couple of other items. First, there was mentioned earlier that we did use yesterday to do pretty much all employee, a significant number of our employees, at least those that can get in front of computers and didn't have jobs that required them to be at work in order to keep the lights on, in diversity, inclusion, and equity training yesterday. I want to commend Lorna in particular for pulling that together. I thought it went really well. It was a very interesting session, and I was really pleased with the level of engagement of our employees in the discussions that we had, a very high level of engagement. And what we told them yesterday is that, number one, this is something where we believe that it's important to be good at this. To be a great utility, you want to be able to have the biggest possible candidate pool. And so you want an environment that allows you to attract from all areas in order to be able to be successful. And that this is not a precursor to a system of quotas or anything else. It's really about just having open hearts and minds as we make decisions about recruiting and promotion to try to make sure that we are getting the best and the brightest here, because that's how we get to be a great utility. So we also said that we don't have a plan right now as to where we go next. We're going to evaluate how this went and then make decisions about what happens and next steps. That's it for that item. Got one more, which is just, I think the board knows that I am co-chairing the Carbon Task Force for the American Public Power Association. My co-chair, Kevin Gayden from Indiana, and I will be putting out a letter to the task force today that indicates that with the change in administration and the control of the Senate and some legislation that has recently come to light coming out of the House, that we're going to be fairly active this year in terms of putting together a proposal for how to proceed. And what we have told folks is that our policy is what we call yes if. And by that I mean that the primary legislation that seems likely to move forward in the House will be clean electricity standard legislation. And that we want to be on the side of saying yes to clean electricity legislation if it includes a variety of different things that will address affordability and reliability. That's really quite similar to the position that we took in Washington State and ultimately the CETA legislation. And that includes things like rate caps and help for those utilities that have coal assets that have a long time to finish their depreciation, along with making sure that the kinds of issues that we're seeing in California, the reliability issues, capacity issues that are going on, that those get addressed as well. So we're on the step, another step in a journey towards, you may recall that last year the APPA adopted a resolution on climate change. We're trying to take that a step further to address the more specific legislative issues that are showing up in the Congress this year. I think that's it. Back to you, Commissioner Smith.
Thank you. We're down to commission items, and on our agenda we have two, but we always open it up to if any commissioner has any other items, we open that up. But hopefully you all have before you the proposed motion for Helping Hands contribution, and I think we all recall the conversation we had at our last meeting about out of our public power dividend monies, we wanted to reach out and do what we could under the rule of law that governs us within the confines of our law to help those that might have greater need. And the motion is to match current countywide contributions that have come in since 2020. So I opened it up for somebody to put the motion on the floor so we can have a conversation.
Mr. President, I would like to propose a motion to make a one-time contribution to the district's Helping Hands program in the amount of $40,656 from the district's 2021 public power benefit funds to assist with increased low-income customer owners' needs resulting from impacts of COVID-19 and to keep the Helping Hands program sustainable beyond COVID-19. The amount of $40,656 represents the district's match to the voluntary contributions made by the district's customer owners for the period March 1st, 2020 through December 31st, 2020.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Is there discussion?
I think this is good. Yeah.
Okay. Any other discussion?
Commissioners, I might just say, because I'm not sure that it was on the record at the last meeting, that the last meeting we talked about a $32,000 amount that the customers had contributed from the period of March through the middle of December, so that number has been updated to capture through the end of the year, so that's where the $40,000 number comes from.
Right. Any other discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all
I'd like to just before we go forward, I'd just like to say one quick thing, and that is I am a strong supporter of supporting the community and an even bigger supporter when the community is willing to step up and help those less fortunate. And in my opinion, this is a prime example of members of this community who have empathy for those less fortunate and are willing to apply their own dollars to help those less fortunate with their ability to pay utility bills. And for one, as a commissioner, I am honored to propose this motion, but also to be standing here with all of you today about to consider whether or not we move forward on this motion. I think that the district getting behind customer owners, I think we've all heard the line that if you teach someone to catch a fish, they eat for a day, but if you teach them how to fish, they eat for the rest of their life. And I think that sharing in this manner is more akin to the second example there. So that's just one commissioner's opinion.
Okay. Additional discussion or comment on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is carried unanimously. So the next item on our commissioner agenda is one that I brought forward and would like to, for the benefit of those on the call, somewhat tee up how this came forward. I, as a member of the Upper Valley Commissioner group that gets together for breakfast each month, a couple of months ago, proposed that we, at the local level, really had an obligation to start looking at how we could deliver a message to Chelan County, how we looked at governance and public policy and our public service. We're all aware that there's been a high level of angst and anger in politics today, and we didn't see ourselves in that same light, and we wanted, we started a conversation that has culminated our last conversation, and I will share with you who was involved in the conversation. That was Commissioner Bob Bugert, Port Commissioner J.C. Baldwin, PUD Commissioners Steve McKenna and Randy Smith, although Steve didn't make the last meeting, and State Representative Keith Gaynor. And all of us decided that we wanted to put forward an effort to let our constituents know how we see it as appropriate to do business in our various arenas. The conversation that we had at our last breakfast, which happened, I believe it was January 8th, was that we wanted to come up with a document that we could bring forward potentially to the Tri-Commission, which we have been operating within effectively for many years here in Chelan County, and talk about the idea or the concept of, could we get all of the electeds in Chelan County on the same page as to how we conduct our business, not what we think, not what we support or don't support, but how we conduct our business. This document was given to us, I think it came from the Association of Washington Cities or Association of Washington Counties as a template. So it isn't my goal here this afternoon to suggest that we pass this automatically, although, you know, we need to talk about it. But do we want to answer a couple of questions? Do we want to do something like this in a public setting? And if we do, what do we want to do with it once we decide we pass it? So it's a public conversation about how we view our role in conducting business in the public arena. And as Dennis is fully aware, we as a commission have lived by something similar to this for the last 11 years at Chelan PUD, and it's our group agreement on how we operate within our own utility, and as Dennis can attest to, we underwent a little bit of criticism 11 years ago for doing this in a very public role. And quit laughing, Dennis. Quit. but this is an attempt on the Upper Valley Commissioner's part to say we want to let the people of Chelan County know how we plan to do our public business. So with that as a backdrop and a template, I open it up to my fellow commissioners to talk about this.
Let me start by saying I think it's an appropriate document. And I think it's an appropriate time. January 6th, we came about as close as this country ever has to having not only an insurrection, but a successful one. And I think a great deal of what created the anxiety that created the action was really a lack of respect and civility, person to person, group to group, party to party. And I think a commitment to essentially treat each other with respect, to speak truthfully, as the document also says, to avoid distortion, is a really appropriate thing for us to do. And I think what occurred January 6th is also a loss of the concept of personal responsibility. As an individual, what is it that we owe to each other individually and collectively in terms of our own truthfulness, authenticity, sensitivity, and respectability? And so I think what this document says to me or reminds me is if we're going to function as a society, if we're going to function perhaps as a city council, a PUD commission, a county commission, we have to be individually first responsible for our own behavior, and then collectively, I think as a group, we need to be responsible in terms of, you know, how we treat others. And always keep in mind, you know, who it is and what it is that we're representing. I like, you know, the concept of civil society, humility, kindness, caring, faith, just basic principles of life, and to commit to do those as we think about our own thoughts and as we change those thoughts into actions, if this can be a guide for helping us do that better and more effectively, I'd like to see us go in this direction. Thank you.
Other thoughts from my fellow commissioners?
As always, Dennis, I appreciate your words of wisdom. This has really been overwhelming to me and discouraging, and it's coming from education background. When you visit with people, they love their local school. They love their local folks. And it's the people down the road that are problems. And as I look at our role as elected officials, you know, I think we have a lot of people that respect us via the PUD's reputation. That could change in a minute if we made decisions that people don't like, which is the process that should happen. But I feel that it's our duty to stand up and take a commitment, make a commitment, and ask people to hold us accountable to what we believe and how we behave. You know, Randy, I appreciate the fact that this is going to the Tri-Commission for discussion and review. You know, my question is, are we opening this up to school boards and other elected officials that, I mean, I even see a large opener on a newspaper that has all of our signatures and our names and our commitment to this process. So I'm totally behind this. I feel it's imperative that we do this. And the whole process of healing, finding hope through truth, begins with us at the local level. And if we do that across the country at the local level, I think it will be a very, very healing opportunity. And I don't know, as I think about this and talk about it, it's pretty emotional to me. And I think this is something that we can do.
Any thoughts, Gary?
Thoughts. And they're all supportive. I have been spending the last week asking myself how we as a country got here. Feeling ashamed that this is what the best I'm able to do to leave to my grandchildren. And feeling responsible as the generation to which this all occurred that we witnessed last Tuesday. And yes, feeling like we're compelled to do something to change, to better, to reverse course from what we've been on. This is a huge undertaking. And in my opinion, it starts here at the ground level, with the elected within communities across America, with everyone saying that they're in agreement that this is not a direction we want to go, or a government that we want to leave to our grandchildren, that sees the type of things and witnesses the types of things we saw happen in Washington, D.C. I'm firmly committed and supportive of a pledge to civility. And I think it needs to start, and we're a good place for it to start, and it needs to be embraced and adopted across all of our community. You know, people that did that ran up the steps, they weren't all politicians, they were just citizens, and they had grievances, right or wrong. Part of what this document says is that we will listen and try to understand. And that's the healing process. And it won't always be easy, but I'm in full support of bringing this before the Tri-Commission, seeing if we can get our other electeds to be in support. And as Commissioner McKenna said, whether that involves school district elected officials, anyone who puts on the hat of representing the citizens of their community would be invited to participate and embrace this document. Those are my thoughts.
I think I hear unanimity. So I'm looking, you know, it's sort of neat. I'm looking at the screen and I'm looking at Tracy right now. And I'm wondering, maybe I should ask Steve too. I heard four people speak strongly that we want to move this forward to the Tri-Commission. How would we go about that structure-wise?
I think the key there is that what we would do is we have a group that of commissioners, actually, that get together to define the agenda for the Tri-Commission meeting. Justin Erickson helps to pull that together. And so what he would do is identify this as an agenda item coming from Chelan PUD. In the meeting that would involve a Chelan PUD commissioner, a county commissioner, and a port commissioner, they would discuss adding this to the agenda. I believe our next meeting is in March. I'm not sure. Justin, can you help me with that if you're on, as to when the next Tri-Commission meeting is?
Hi, Yvonne. Sorry, my picture's so dark. Yes, the Tri Commission meeting has not officially been scheduled yet, but Rebecca, I know, is working on coordination with the entities and to find a mutually agreeable date. And we do believe that that can occur sometime in March.
And I believe that also, independent of what we're doing here today, I believe the county commissioners and the port commissioners were also going to be looking at this document. So this may come forward, from all three, which would be great. But I think what was I heard here was a desire to make it bigger than just the Tri-Commission, to make it a community-wide leadership effort to reach out to our public.
Yeah, I think the question just for us as staff would be whether you want to have the Tri-Commission meeting first and then expand from there, or whether you want to do something before the Tri-Commission in the expansion effort.
Any thoughts from my fellow commissioners?
Hey, my personal opinion is this is a timely issue. And if the Tri-Commission were not to meet for 45 days, we might lose some of the momentum.
We could adopt this and reach out to other electeds on our own. We could do that. I don't know how that would structurally, how that would work.
Said something that really intrigued me. And Steve, you mentioned you could see this on an opener on a newspaper, where mm-hmm. or some kind of media where it was signed on to. And perhaps that might be a pathway forward. That would create the opportunity for an invitation for electeds to participate.
Legislative session, there might be some opportunity, I would think, with our own delegation, perhaps. Folks meeting in regular attendance, even virtually, if this could get in front of our state representatives, might be a great opportunity during the legislative session.
I'm still struggling with this. You know, I think we all want to make this happen. It's just a matter of what the next step is. Looking for some wisdom. I'm wide open to any ideas.
Commissioner Smith, if you don't mind, I'll make one suggestion. I think a lot of this came from the discussion of the Upper Valley Group. And
yep.
I think you're reporting back to the Upper Valley Group about what happened here. Maybe a helpful way to determine what the county commission and the port commission are interested in doing, and that would help at least us to understand whether to try to act prior to a tri-commission meeting, that the three commissions may not need to wait for a tri-commission meeting to come together, or to whether to do expansion. But that core group may be a good place to help define next steps.
I will be happy to take on that workload. I'll do it.
And maybe as part of that, Randy, we could ask Tracy and our communication staff to provide us some assistance, that if we were to get a communication out to electeds to see who would like to participate in publicly sharing this document in the newspaper, how would we go about doing that? So I'm looking for some assistance there.
Together and even make some initial contacts with staff and maybe provide a couple of ideas on how the broader communication might work and also communications with some of the elected officials.
And we'll be careful in doing that because we understand this is a commissioner-led effort, and so we will want to make sure that it's led by the commission, and anything that we come up with, it'll be actions really from the commission.
Right.
Eric, do you see any landmines going down this road?
Not presently.
Okay, thank you.
I also think we have some people that are influential on the Yomapuna board at this point, and it might be a good thing to see if perhaps we can get that on the agenda for the next board meeting in February, and invite our fellow colleagues from around the state to consider this and maybe consider it as a Wapuda issue as well.
Good idea, Dennis.
Yeah. Okay, well, based on what I heard here, I don't know that we need a, quote, vote to endorse this particular document, but maybe it would be better if we did.
Randy, I would be happy and honored to move that we adopt this statement as our stance by commissioners for the PUD.
Would you say that motion would say this is our commitment to our constituents?
Thank you for adding that to my motion.
I think that's what makes this one different than the other one that we have. Is there a second to that motion? It's moved and seconded that we adopt a pledge to civility and public service as a commitment to our constituents.
Well said.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you. And I will make contact with my fellow Upper Valley folks and let them know what we've done and the flavor of the discussion we had here and our desire to see this become bigger than just us.
Commissioner Smith, I think it would be good also if you could reach out to Commissioner Congdon, who is not able to be here today.
I will do so, yes. Okay. Item 12, follow-up on delegation of action items from the previous meeting.
We had just one, and that was to bring back the motion on helping hands, and so that one has been taken care of. But I would like to also mention that we have some things that we've cleaned up out of our parking lot. We had one that to provide information about employment for contractors relating to the service center. So we have included that in the material that you saw today. So hopefully that meets the need there. We had one with respect to going all the way back to a board workshop on providing knowledge for new commissioners to come up to speed. We're using the APPA governance document, the new governance document that had mentioned at a previous meeting, and adding that to the materials that would go to a new commissioner. We had one with respect to reporting back to the commissions on a potential future swim beach location in Chelan. We think that we've dealt with that with the resolution on the Manson Parks, with Manson Parks, around the future disposition of what is called the dog park. We had one with respect to getting out the word on 2021 Women in Public Power. You heard Lorna report on that today and the manager items. And we had one that started with Commissioner McKenna regarding reviewing the board GM protocol of this came out of a board workshop as well. That protocol was circulated, and we got comments back from Commissioner McKenna that he had no edits at this time. And so we are considering that item, unless there's something else out there, we're considering that item closed. Any comments on any of that? Okay, thank you.
Okay, at this moment in time, on our agenda, is it any additional public comment? And I've noticed that we do have a, I think maybe a couple members of the public in attendance on this call. So at this moment in time, if any member of the public or anybody wants to provide input to the commission, mics are open, and we ask that you state your name and address for the record, and please try to limit your comments to 3 minutes.
Commissioner Smith, we've come to realize that a call-in user may not be a member of the public. It might be a member of our staff who's on. So.
Gotcha. Okay, so since it appears we do not have any people wishing to address the board, item 15 is any other matters that may necessarily come before the commission.
Commissioner Smith, we did pass over one item. Just want to cover it real quick. It's action items coming out of this meeting. And we only have one, and that's to for the communications team to give some thought to how to facilitate the civility and public service outreach plan and communication. So we'll get back to the board with that.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it. And I apologize for missing a number in my first meeting as board president. You can fire me. No? No? Okay. All right. So it appears we have need for an executive session. Do you have a time on that executive session?
60 minutes.
60 minutes, okay. So we need this executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement, actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and or legal risk as authorized by RCW 42.30.1101I, and the plan, the strategy, or position to be taken during the course of collective bargaining as authorized by RCW 42.30.144B. We have a separate number to call back into, Rebecca, is that correct?
Yes, there's a separate WebEx invite on your calendar.
Okay. And so we will move directly into that executive session for approximately 60 minutes. And we have to get off and get on the new call. This is Randy Smith, and the Chelan PUD Commission is coming out of executive session. No votes were taken. No decisions were made. Is there any other business to come before the commission? Hearing none, I will adjourn the meeting.